Or views. Meanwhile, in other news, fury at the vigil held in London for the victims of the massacre on Bondi Beach. Here's the moment Labour MP and Junior Minister Ashley Dalton was heckled addressing that vigil.
The government does not and will not tolerate anti-Semitism. We're Jewish people today.
And isn't that the reality? Meanwhile, the panorama drama, President Trump.
In a little while, you'll be seeing I'm suing the BBC for putting words in my mouth, literally, to put words in my mouth. They had me saying things that I never said coming out. I guess they used AI or something.
Plus, the former senior cabinet minister who's calling for a movement to address a lost generation of young people neither earning nor learning. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, authorities in Australia have found explosives and IS flags in a car registered to one of the Bondi Beach attackers. They believe father and son, Sajid and Navid Akram, were inspired by the Islamic State group. They killed 15 people at a Hanukkah event in Sydney on Sunday. Australian students Wilson and Josh joined a vigil for the victims in Westminster last night.
It was just shocking to see some place that I'm so familiar with be desecrated in such a way. I'm quite shaken up.
You would never think something so crazy and so such an act of violence would happen in a place that I'm also so familiar with.
Police are also investigating a trip the gunman made to the Philippines a month before the shooting. President Trump has followed through on his threat to file a defamation lawsuit against the BBC. LBC's US correspondent Simon Marks has more.
For over a month, the Trump lawsuit against the BBC has been threatened but not filed. Now the president says he's moving forward.
So we'll be filing that suit probably this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
The president previously claimed he would sue the corporation for up to $5 billion over Panorama's editing of the speech to his supporters on January the 6th, 2021, just before they rioted on Capitol Hill. The BBC has apologized to him but insists there is no legal case to answer. Simon Marks, LBC, Washington.
European leaders say they've made major progress in talks on a deal for peace in Ukraine. It follows an offer from the US to provide a NATO-style backing for Kiev's security in any deal with Russia. There are concerns the UK is becoming a dumping ground for goods made using slave labour. Britain's anti-slavery commissioner is calling for new laws similar to those in the US and EU to stop products entering the market. They include cheaply produced toys and clothing. Eleanor Lyons, who's been speaking to LBC, has also warned about solar panels made in China.
There are people that are forced to work every single hour of the day. They're under constant surveillance, and we also can't send in inspectors. Everyone would be really uncomfortable having our race to net zero being at the expense of forced labour and slaves in those conditions.
More than 2,500 speeding fines could be cancelled because of a technical issue with cameras. It's understood a software update caused a problem with some variable cameras on England's A roads and motorways. Affected drivers will have their fines refunded and points removed. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 97.51 after closing up 102 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, a foggy start followed by a dry day with plenty of sunshine, cloudier with patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after seven on Tuesday, September the 16th. The doctors vote to strike with a thumping majority, rejecting this last-ditch offer, much to the fury of the Health Secretary and indeed the Prime Minister. But have they got a valid cause? To Australia. to, of course, the shootings at Bondi. Here's the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Mal Lanyon, giving an update concerning possible terror training in the Philippines.
The reasons why they went to the Philippines and the purpose of that is under investigation at the moment. I also confirm that the vehicle, which is registered to the younger male, contained two homemade ISIS flags.
Meanwhile, back here in London, when a government minister addressed a vigil in London, they were heckled by angry, I would imagine, Jewish people who say the suggestion that they're being protected is just derisory. We'll look at that in more detail. Staying with the government, they say that they are going to bring a solution to the dental crisis. Mark Jones is from the Toothless in England campaign. He says
NHS dentistry has become pretty much obsolete now. One in eight of us don't have access to a dentist, and many of those suffering in pain.
Are you one of the thousands of innocent drivers who've been wrongly fined in a speed camera scandal? We'll give you all the details and work out whether you can get your cash back. Plus,
Britain is becoming a dumping ground for billions of pounds worth of Christmas decorations, toys and T-shirts tainted with child and slave labour. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive report.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The Prime Minister's urged doctors to push back against the BMA, the British Medical Association, over a strike this week. He says it's, quote, self-indulgent, irresponsible and dangerous. Well, we'll be speaking with someone from, a senior member, actually, of the BMA, the relevant BMA, British Medical Association Committee, in a moment or two. But here's my colleague in the studio, LBC's reporter Henry Riley, with the full background. Henry, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. The results wasn't even close of that online ballot we discussed yesterday, a landslide endorsement to continue with strike action. Now, the question put to medics was, is the most recent offer presented by the government sufficient to call off December's strike action? And it saw a whopping 83% of respondents vote no, therefore to continue strike action, which, by the way, is now less than 24 hours away. Only 17% of those who responded voted to call off the looming industrial action. So those 5 days will start at 7 a.m. tomorrow, ending at the same time on Monday. That's the 22nd of December. 65% of resident doctor members voted. That was the turnout. Just over 35,000 ballots affecting potentially millions of patients. This was the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, speaking with Tom Swarbrick on LBC yesterday.
I offered the BMA the chance to postpone their strike action to January. I'd extend their mandate for strike action over that period so that we could have like-for-like strike action when it's not the most dangerous time for the NHS. They have chosen not to take up that offer, and they have chosen a week where they know it causes maximum damage to the NHS and, frankly, maximum risk of harm to patients as well. And I actually think the rejection of postponing their strikes to help us through a challenging winter and through the patient safety risk this week is the most shameful chapter in the BMA's history since they marched against the NHS's founding in the first place.
And he also said he couldn't trust the union. Now, responding on LBC was Dr. Jack Fletcher, who is from the BMA's Resident Doctor Committee, and claimed the strikes were avoidable.
I don't think it's a fantasy demand to ask for our pay to keep up with inflation, let alone to return to the value of what doctors were in 2008. We're not asking for anything overnight in one go. We're asking for a credible offer that lasts potentially a number of years, and in exchange, we would see an end to industrial action if that's a credible deal.
And there was a further intervention on LBC last night by the Labour peer and medical doctor Lord Winston, who's quit the BMA over doctor strikes, the ones that took place in the summer. He told Andrew Marr that there would be serious consequences as a result.
I'm concerned for the NHS, I'm concerned for the patients, and actually, in a sense, I'm also concerned for the doctors, because I think they're hugely misled, and I don't believe that they understand really what they're doing. What they are creating, indeed, is the risk of human life. There's no question about that.
You think people will die as a result of this?
I think people will die of it.
Nick, tomorrow's industrial action will mark the 14th strike since March 2023 by resident doctors as part of this long-running dispute.
Henry Riley reporting 8 minutes after 7:02. Sir Mel Stride, who's Shadow Chancellor, joining me now. Why does the government find itself in this hole this morning, do you imagine, Sir Mel? Good morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. Well, can I firstly say that I agree, actually, with what the government is saying about the BMA and the doctor's strike. I think it's totally irresponsible. I think the very least they should have done was to postpone it into the new year. It's being done at a time of maximum impact And that's going to have a devastating effect on the NHS and patients. As to why they're in this situation, well, we said way back when the first round of negotiations occurred that the government should not just simply roll over and give in to the demands of the doctors at that time. They should at least be saying they wanted productivity improvements, and yet they rolled over and gave them 22%, thinking naively that this would mean they wouldn't be coming back for more. Well, I think we've seen the fallacy of that situation in what's happening at the moment.
Both sides seem desperately dug in, Sir Mel. How is peace to break out, do you imagine?
Well, I think that we've reached a point where I can't see in the immediate term how the government should be in a position where they start giving in to the kind of demands that the BMA are putting forward. I think we're looking at 26% as a further increase. That's on top of the 28 to 29% that's already been achieved by the BMA in recent times. So I think they just have to tough this one through. But as I say, the government were very flat-footed at the start of this at the beginning. They should have got a grip on this. And I think they were very naive to have thought that this would all just be bought off by early concessions that they made.
Just a quick word on the positioning, the stance by Health Secretary Wes Streeting, describing them as juvenile delinquents, moaning minis, the disgraceful chapter. Is that the sort of language that someone who ultimately is going to have to sit down with these folk across the negotiating table, is that the language he should employ?
No. But I think it's perfectly reasonable to say that they are being irresponsible, and that is the language that I would use, because this is going to have real impacts, not just on the health service, but on patients. And you just had a clip there with the suggestion that people might actually lose their lives as a consequence. I think it is that serious, actually, and I think that should be called out.
Figures that have just dropped, while I've got you on another matter, if I can get a word on you, this unemployment has risen to 5.1% in the 3 months to October. If I'm hitting you with these figures, by the way, I'd be grateful for a response. That's up from 5%. Commentator saying the labour market has continued to weaken. As Shadow Chancellor, your response, Sir Mel?
Well, sadly, I'm not surprised. You know, if you tax something, Nick, you tend to get less of it. And the first thing that the government did when they came into office was whack taxes on businesses and particular jobs in terms of national insurance increases. They talked down the economy. They've mishandled the run-up to this budget by flying all these various kites on different taxes, taxes that would go up, kill the animal spirits. And the final thing they've done is they borrowed and spent vast amounts of money, stoked inflation, and that's meant interest rates higher for longer. And that has also weighed down on business and the jobs market. So I'm afraid, you know, if you take those kind of choices, this is what you should expect.
Let you go after I ask for a word on growth. The last three figures, 0.2, 0.1, and the most recent, minus 0.1. Sir Mel, we're going backwards.
We are going backwards. So if you take the 3 months up to end of October, Nick, the economy actually contracted by 0.1%. And that is a consequence of exactly the things that I've just run through in relation to the labour market. You've really got a chancellor that just doesn't understand the economics, particularly around business. And that's no surprise if you look at Labour's front bench, Nick, because you've got barely anybody on there that has any real life experience of business. We've just had the president of the CPI, Rupert Soames, as he steps down, making exactly that point. They just don't get it, I'm afraid.
All right. I doubt I'll see you beforehand, so happy Christmas to you and your family. Thanks for all your words, work through the year, and your comments here on LBC. Sir Mel Stride, Shadow Chancellor, 12 after 7. Let's meet with Dr. Siobhan Sharma, who is a BMA Resident Doctors Committee Deputy Chair. Thanks for coming on, Doctor. So, you and your colleagues are self-indulgent, irresponsible, dangerous, and that this is a disgraceful chapter in your association's history. How would you respond, sir? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I would disagree with that, and I think the 30,000 doctors that overwhelmingly voted for strike action to reject the deal would also disagree with that. The feedback that we received is that this deal doesn't go far enough on both jobs and pay. And on jobs, we know that we're under-doctored as a nation. We're about 40,000 doctors short compared to the EU average, and that's at a time when wards are understaffed. And in my own specialty, child and adolescent psychiatry, kids can wait over 22 months to see a doctor. And what people are hoping, what doctors are hoping, is to increase the total number of jobs within the NHS so we can see patients and that we're not burnt out trying to do the jobs of multiple doctors.
But, Doctor, obviously taking yet more industrial action, that's not going to bring that 22-month waiting list down, sir, is it?
Well, I think that what will bring the waiting list down is more doctors. I think what's actually going to be bad for patients is to continue down this trend that we're going on, where when there aren't any strike action, when there isn't any strike action, that patients are waiting over 12 hours in A&E in corridors when the waits used to be less than four. There's millions of appointments that are being cancelled every year without any strike action because we are understaffed. And also, we had a time when patients were waiting less than 4 hours, where appointments were being cancelled, when doctors actually wanted to stay and work in the NHS, where we weren't wasting taxpayers' money training up doctors who are graduating with £100,000 worth of student debt, becoming now unemployed after 2 years of training, being a doctor, and then heading off to Australia. And that is making us Australia's best medical school.
Dr. Larsey, can I put to you the suggestion by senior medical professionals? People are going to die during this industrial action.
Well, I would completely disagree with that, and I want to be evidence-based. We know that senior colleagues, consultants, will be covering this strike action, and we know that studies have shown that mortality rates do not increase. They stay the same, if not decrease, during strike action because we have those experienced senior consultants that are covering. And actually, what's dangerous for patients is continuing down this trend where doctors continue to leave, patients aren't getting the care that they deserve, and doctors are feeling that they're in a system that is setting them up to fail.
All right. Grateful for your time. Thank you, Dr. Shivam Sharma. You are the BMA Resident Doctors Committee Deputy Chair. Thank you for your input on that. The strike is on. Lives could be lost. Do you still support those striking doctors? And in other news, at a vigil here in the UK, in London, for the victims of the murder, the shooting on Bondi Beach, Labour MP Junior Minister Ashley Dalton heckled when she addressed the crowd.
The government does not and will not tolerate anti-Semitism. We stand with Jewish people today.
You do tolerate it. Ban the marches. That's the reality on the streets. We'll look at that later. Plus,
I've been driving in my car.
Are you one of the tens of thousands of drivers whose speeding cases should be scrapped? 40% of cameras on motorways and A-roads had a fault that they knew about. We'll tell you more later in the show. 16 minutes after 7, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Detectives in Australia believe the Bondi Beach attackers were inspired by the Islamic State group. President Trump's followed through on his threat to file a defamation lawsuit against the BBC, and figures just released show the UK's unemployment rate rose to 5.1% in October. LBC weather quite foggy this morning, then dry with plenty of sunshine, but cloudier in the southeast. A high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25 anti-clockwise, two lanes are closed because of an accident after junction 28 for the A12, so there are long delays with queues from junction 29 for Romford. There are queues on the M4 going into town. There's a lane blocked on the elevated section before junction 2 for Brentford because a car has broken down. There are long delays on the North Circular and on the A13 approaching the Beckton roundabout. Two lanes are blocked on the roundabout because a lorry has broken down. In Barking, Loxford Lane is closed in both directions for accident investigation work between Hornbeam Close and Medway Close. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the District Line between Earls Court and Wimbledon. That's because of some problems with the signals. And also on the Tube, there are minor delays on the entire Bakerloo Line. That's because of cancellations.
This is LBC.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco. Every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th. Hawk, 6th of the 1st. Gammon, 13th of the 1st. Salmon, 1st of the 1st. Club card required.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Think about cheese. Make your thoughts cheesier. Now add 100% chicken breast fillet, chipotle sauce and a mega cheese melt. And it's giving the new cheesy chicken stack at McDonald's. Did we mention it's cheesy?
Cheese.
Available until the 4th of Jan 2026 from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia. And we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7, if you were listening on Friday, you heard that impassioned plea from the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, urging doctors not to take that industrial action. But I think that the majority of about 4-1, they voted to take the actions you've already heard here on LBC. I'm just trying to quickly check what the figures are. It was 83%, wasn't it, who voted for the strike? Yes, 83. Gosh, 8. It's 5-1, I'm so sorry. 83% to 17%. Thumping, isn't it? Quickly, the front pages. This story is on the front page of a number of your papers. Doctors strike despite flu fears is the Times. Doctors strike after rejecting last-ditch offer is the front page of The Guardian. Quickly, these are some of the other papers. A story I've mentioned already. The Daily Mail, drivers wrongly fined in speed camera scandal. Could that be you? You're going to get your money back? What are the roads affected? You'll find out if you stay tuned later in the show. A couple of other front pages just quickly for you. The Daily Telegraph, again a story we're going to look at later in this hour. Trump kicks off BBC court battle. President to sue the corporation for $5 billion over that panorama. Yes, the panorama, a drama goes on. And the front page of the Metro. Simple, selfish rage sparked the parade terror. This is the appalling story of the former Royal Marine. I know that angers you who are in the Marines, but... And I know you say that he wasn't in there very long, but he did serve, so that's what he's going to be called, ploughing his car through a parade of Liverpool football fans, getting out of the effing way as he drove into men, women and children. Amazingly, no one lost their lives. Front page of the LBC app is that Trump story, Trump suing the BBC. And let's take one other at random, and this is the front page of the Huff Post, which is talking about the ongoing woes and problems for Sir Keir Starmer, surrounded, it says, by people plotting and seeking to remove him from the job. 21 after 7. Stephen's in Bristol. Stephen, support or no support for the doctors? Where are you on this? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, as a doctor myself, I'm actually in support this time. I'm currently applying for specialty training, and Wes is sort of one for application numbers just don't make sense to me. It's currently 1 in 16 as of last year's stats, and so I'm facing homelessness, and I just am really not seeing that Wes is making a difference.
You're working as a doctor now?
Yeah.
Right. You're going to be homeless?
Well, if I don't have a job...
Right.
Which is... Last year was 60% of FY2s, which is a doctor who's applying for specialty training.
Right.
Then... I have no money to have a job to pay for rent, so yes.
Let me ask you, is it more the fact that your chances for advancement are so difficult or so slim now, as opposed to the money, or are they both equally valid in your eyes and worthy of taking this industrial action?
In my eyes, the money, as important as it is, we all came into medicine knowing we weren't going to get rich. We came into medicine to protect people, to support people during their difficult times, and we're not getting that opportunity because the government continue to up medical student placements and then aren't actually allowing for us to progress into the career.
Yes, but one thing that doesn't quite add up, just lastly, Stephen, is you, if you can't advance your career, which is wrong and frustrating, but you won't lose your job.
Well, what? How would I work then? If there's no advancement to the career, there is no job, because...
By the way, this is where I have enormous sympathy. And as I said to the Health Secretary last week, and I've said to members of the BMA, I think this is a very valid, and I think this has got much more support in the country than necessary the pay has. But and it shouldn't be like this, Stephen, but you can stay in your current post.
No, so unfortunately, once my 2 years end, I can't stay in that post.
Oh, you can't?
No. So you have 2 years of guaranteed job after medical school. And then after that, if you don't get into specialty training, you get a locally employed job where you're unemployed, which is why most people are moving abroad. And the locally employed jobs are where he's intending to take the 4,000 into training. So therefore, there's no additional jobs. Additional training.
And when do you reach this pressure point? How much longer have you got in employment?
So I reached that in July.
Next July?
Yeah.
I wish you well. Thank you for spelling it out. No wonder that you're so motivated. And I hope, well, good Lord, I do. I was going to say I hope it's resolved by then, but as Henry Riley was telling us earlier, this is the 14th industrial action since March 2023, so that's been 2.5 years of it. And you're talking next July. Stephen, I hope the situation improves. Thank you for your input. Chris in Richmond. Chris, you're on the... Oh, hello, Chris. Hope you're well.
Good morning. I think just the double standards are incredible. One minute they're saying, well, we need more money because we're important to the society. And next minute they're telling you, well, if we go on strike, it's not going to kill patients. Which is it? You know, it's just, it's ridiculous. You know,
do you have any level of sympathy for them at all, Chris?
Well, I do on the training places, but look, my mother was a nurse for many years in orthopaedic hospital for many, many years, and she worked nights, she worked weekends, she worked Christmases. Not once did she go on strike. Mm. And, you know, the nurses don't get the nice parking spaces. They have to take public transport when they go to work. You know, they have to wash their own uniforms. They don't get treated as well. The doctors, I'm afraid, the BMA, Ian Dale said it, they're like a left-wing cabal now.
Although, the gentleman with whom we were just speaking, he seemed to make a very valid case, didn't he, Chris?
Well, yes and no, though. But as I said, they don't lose... Yeah, some may lose, but possibly...
But he might lose his job. If he doesn't get something, he's going to be out of work in July, or certainly in August.
Yeah, but there are other opportunities. And at the end of the day, yes, they can fix the train places. Is going on strike going to fix the problem? No, it's just going to create more backlog operations, more people dying unnecessarily. And their timing is unbelievable.
Yeah, that I am with you. That is extraordinary, and I can understand the frustration. Best wishes to you and your family, Chris. Thank you for that. First two calls, one in favour, one against. 50-50. Where are you? I'll factor in some of your emails and other messages a little bit later. Let's go to other matters. And as I mentioned earlier, people gathered in Parliament Square in central London last night to honour the victims of the deadly Bondi shooting. OBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott was there and reports now. Helen, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, organisers said the aim of the event was to bring light to the darkness. Several hundred people gathered in Parliament Square, many holding Israeli flags, the crowd spilling out onto the road, surrounded by a ring of police officers. People went to watch the lighting of a menorah for Hanukkah, 8 lights for the 8 nights of the holiday. I spoke to Gideon Falter, the chief executive of Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, which organised the event with Shabad UK.
First and foremost, we wanted to be here in Parliament Square to show solidarity with the people who lost their lives and were murdered so cruelly in Sydney. But there's a second thing as well. We wanted to show that we are determined to continue to practice our faith and to spread the joy that Hanukkah is supposed to represent.
Now, as I say, there was a heavy police presence at the event. The Met released a statement to say officers were there to provide a visible reassurance and deterrence and would act swiftly in the event of any incidents. And while there were some shouts of Free Palestine from a handful of passers-by, there were no escalations last night. But that deep sense of fear and concern many in the Jewish community have spoken of feeling following Sunday's terror attack in Bondi didn't stop people gathering in Westminster last night. These people told me why they went.
I grew up in Canberra, but I was born in Sydney and I've moved back there for studies. So I live quite close to where the attack happened. So it was just shocking to see some place that I'm so familiar with be like desecrated in such a way. And the people there who have like... Something like that would never be a thought in that, and to like twist that the way they've done is really messing with me. It's really, I'm quite shaken up. Yeah.
You would never think something so crazy and such an act of violence would happen in a place that I'm also so familiar with. Got grandparents, first cousins who live, you know, 5 minutes from the beach, and I think just to have such a beautiful place like Bondi Beach to have something so horrific happen is quite eye-opening. We heard about the event through the Jewish community here, and I think just feeling an obligation not only as a Jew here, but an Australian Jew who's, you know, so geographically so far from home right now, and thought we'd come and support the Jewish community and the victims of that horrific event.
And Nick, there was some confusion at the start of the event after Steve Reed, the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government, couldn't be located in the crowd to give a speech. Social media posts suggest he attended Jewish Labour's Hanukkah event last night instead. But Labour MP and Junior Minister Ashley Dalton did give a speech at the vigil in Parliament Square instead, met with heckles from the crowd.
The government does not and will not tolerate anti-Semitism. We are with Jewish people today. I understand that there is anger and there is fear. I appreciate that.
Can I ask, please let the minister speak. The minister's here, come here. Hear what she has to say.
And speaking to MPs yesterday, the Prime Minister acknowledged that the Bondi Beach attack was not an isolated incident and was part of a pattern of incidents focused on Jewish holy days. The Manchester terror attack targeting a synagogue was, of course, carried out on Yom Kippur just 2 months ago.
Helen Hoddenott reporting. Go away, you understand nothing. We'll look at that in more detail later in the show. In related stories, again, we're looking at later in the show. Police in Australia now investigating a trip the father and son took to the Philippines as recently as last month. Did they undergo some form of terror training? And back here in the UK, the green energy tycoon Dale Vince, Labour urged to cut ties with him after he put out the most ridiculous post, which seems to justify, in a sense, seem to justify the events on Bondi Beach. We'll be sharing more of that with you as well. Alex, you're the next caller. I hope you can hold to the other side of the news when we can give you a decent run at it. Also coming up after the news,
the latest unemployment data marks a grim note to end the year, climbing to 5.1% as businesses continue to struggle. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this shortly with Nick.
Plus, top trumps for the president as he tells the BBC, I'll see you in court.
In a little while, you'll be seeing I'm suing the BBC for putting words in my mouth. Literally, they put words in my mouth. They had me saying things that I never said coming out. I guess they used AI or something.
7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari in LBC News Time, Thomas Watts.
Authorities in Australia say they believe the Bondi Beach terrorists were inspired by the Islamic State group. They are investigating a trip they made to the Philippines in the month before Sunday's attack. Donald Trump has filed a defamation lawsuit against the BBC. The president seeking $10 billion in damages over the selective editing of one of his speeches by Panorama. Figures released this morning show the UK's unemployment rate rose to 5.1% in the 3 months to October. That's up from 5% in the previous quarter to its highest level since January 2021. LBC weather quite foggy this morning, then dry with sunshine for many, but cloudier in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
we'll be talking about the terrorist attacks on Bondi Beach and how it's left Jewish communities feeling worldwide. Has there been an uptick in anti-Semitism that is measurable as well as palpable? And where does the line go between protecting freedom of speech and protecting the rights of Jews to not feel scared?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maiklis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £500,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5 p.m. Friday and you could get a call with £500,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822-00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only, global network competition. Full rules and free entry at ChristmasCashCall.com.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, Alex, you will be the next caller. I want to hear whether you're in favour or against the idea of this doctor's strike. But let's dive into the world of finance first. Christian Mayer is editor-in-chief at City AM and joins me now. A little over half an hour ago, we got some data on unemployment. Christian, remind the listeners what the figures were and interpret them, if you would. Morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Nick. Call me Scrooge, I'm afraid, turning up with more bad news, but it is a grim way to end the year. Unemployment rose once again, hitting 5.1% between August and October, up from 5% the previous quarter. Estimated now by the Office for National Statistics, just under 150,000 jobs lost since October of last year. 22,000 of those in October of this year. And then, brace yourself, an estimated, subject to revision, estimated 38,000 jobs lost in November. That is the highest single monthly loss, if those figures are confirmed, when they revise them off new data, highest for 5 years. Now, we know, of course, that this has been building up. This has been the case for month after month after month. And we know the impact on employment that taxes on employment have had, uncertainty around the budget, general tax increasing measures, and of course, most recently we learned basically zero growth. So I'm afraid there's no real way in which the government can spin this as anything other than a real mess and a real policy failure. Now, I don't expect them to be that candid, but when a country is losing jobs month after month after month, and when a country is simply not growing, and I wouldn't be surprised if it comes, GDP growth comes in at the end of this year as flat or negative, then I'm afraid serious questions have to be asked. We know the consequences of government policy now, and one of the most depressing elements of the data that's been released this morning, and which I'm still looking through, is that yet again it is young people and young people in the labour market who are bearing the brunt of all these job losses.
Let's move to other matters. The front page of City AM. Why might reform get in the driving seat with Rolls Royce?
Well, we have sat down, our chief reporter Ali Lyon sat down with Zia Youssef, Reform's policy brains, for a very wide-ranging interview that we published today, in which she sets out some more detailed thinking on Reform's proposed approach to the economy and to business. Now, in addition to talking about the need to cut regulators and take a bit of an axe to some of the red tape in the City of London, he has also talked about the way in which a Reform-led government would, in his word, accelerate a national champion in the form of Rolls-Royce, engineering giant, not least when it comes to their small modular reactors in the nuclear energy sector, which Rolls-Royce is going to be powering ahead with. Zia Youssef has said that a Reform government would come to some sort of deal, or would certainly propose a deal to Rolls-Royce, saying that, look, as a government, we will inject loads of capital, we'll give you loads of contracts, we will back this technology, and in exchange, we're going to want a stake. The British taxpayer maybe should be given a stake in the company, is what he told us. Well, Rolls-Royce declined to comment, but I'm sure that they and many others will be keeping an eye on this, as it speaks to quite an interventionist attitude from a Reform government. And, you know, we get a sense in this interview of some of the tensions, you might say contradictions, between Reform's economic thinking, because in one sense they're quite robustly free market, they want lower taxes, they want less regulation. On the other hand, they're committed to some fairly high welfare policy spending, and they also want to be quite muscular and intervene and support particular businesses in key parts of the sector. So it's a really interesting interview done by Ali Lyon today, and I suspect corporate affairs chiefs will be looking at it to see what it might mean for their relationship with the government if that future government is under Nigel Farage.
Out of a Rolls-Royce and onto one of those folding bicycles, but problems for Brompton.
Brompton Bikes, gosh, There used to be, and I'm sure in some places they still are, quite an iconic image, particularly in London. Mm. I think your fellow broadcasting legend Jeremy Vine is a big fan. But of course, things have changed. So these are the folding commuter bikes, very sort of popular among middle-class commuters. But sales have slumped again. They've slumped, I think, for the third consecutive year. There are a number of reasons for this, but particularly in London, Nick, you will clock as I have clocked that you see fewer of them because you see more and more of the e-bikes, Lime bikes, Forest bikes, the sort of dockless rentable e-bikes that are now absolutely everywhere, and that's a separate story really, isn't it? But Brompton has suffered from that decline. It should be noted that overall financially they're not doing badly at all. Their revenues are holding up and export markets are proving more popular than the home market, but I suppose fashions change and technology changes, so they're not as common a sight in the UK as they used to be.
Grateful for that, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Thank you. 7:39, talk around the same time tomorrow. Talk with Alex and Blackheath now. Do you support or not support the doctor's strike? Good morning.
I do support it. And they have got through them before. I mean, I think they should be paid anything they want. I mean, I don't understand, what price do you put on saving a life?
Well, why aren't we rewarding firefighters at the same level and police officers?
I agree. All of them.
But there has to be something. There's something called the economy. We can't just give them all the money that they want. It is the way it is, unfortunately. There has to be some kind of fiscal responsibility, Alex.
Yeah, but life is... I don't understand. There isn't an argument to saving a life.
Well, then...
What price do you put on saving a life? I've had 3 heart operations from St Thomas's, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. I have another coming next year.
Right.
And
But to my point, there will be people whose lives have been saved by police officers, firefighters, paramedics, ambulance drivers, CSIS.
Give them more money.
Alex, where are we going to get the money from?
Maybe taxing Amazon.
Taxing Amazon is going to... Okay, you've just heard, hopefully you were listening, that the economy is in dire straits. We have growing unemployment and we have a negative growth. The idea we're going to pay whatever doctors or firefighters or police officers want, it's unsustainable, Alex. It can't be done. Now, I'm not saying that in some instances they don't deserve pay rises, and certainly the way that doctors cannot proceed with their career, cannot advance with their career, that is plain wrong. But we can't just give them what everybody wants, Alex. Surely you understand.
What price do you put on saving a life?
Okay. Well, I'm glad they've done you, and I'm glad you've been cared for so well, and continue to listen to the show, and I hope you have a healthy Christmas and New Year break, and I'm grateful for your input, Alex. But I really don't think if you're negotiating, certainly on behalf, if you're the health secretary, you can't simply say what price saving a life. You will run out of money pretty quickly, but I wish you nothing but good health. 7:41, let's go to other matters. And indeed, we cross the Atlantic for the latest on the Panorama drama.
In a little while, you'll be seeing I'm suing the BBC for putting words in my mouth. Literally, they put words in my mouth. They had me saying things that I never said coming out. I guess they used AI or something. So we'll be bringing that lawsuit. A lot of people are asking, when are you bringing that lawsuit? Even the media can't believe that one. They actually put terrible words in my mouth having to do with January 6th that I didn't say. And they got caught. Because I believe somebody at BBC said, this is so bad, it has to be reported. That's called fake news. So we'll be filing that suit probably this afternoon or tomorrow morning.
To my global radio colleague, John Sopel, I remind you, of course, he was long-serving North America editor for the BBC. He's now crew presenter of the News Agents and the News Agents USA. John, it seems you can get any figure between $1 and $5 billion that seem to be this lawsuit was. How is he going to prove a value to that sort of degree, do you imagine? Or will he not even get anywhere close? Morning, John.
Morning, Nick. Well, look, let's face this. This is the start of a negotiation. But you've got two sides who aren't really negotiating. I mean, Nick, you know, Donald Trump, we know, loves to kind of cut a deal. He's looking for a payment, maybe 10 million, maybe 15 million, maybe 20 million. The BBC says it cannot do that. It is licensed players' money. And that is the conflict that you've now got, where the BBC says, we don't think we have libeled him. The Panorama wasn't broadcast in the United States. And therefore, there has been no damage done to his reputation. And look, he won the election anyway. Mm. So if the claim is damage to my reputation, that hasn't changed by the Panorama. But the BBC will then find itself embroiled, if it goes to court, in the most extraordinary legal action. And that would potentially cost tens of millions of dollars. And I think the BBC might be pretty fearful about the process of disclosure, where the Trump legal team say, right, we want to see all your emails about Donald Trump, about the Panorama. And I would guess that among those emails might be some pretty colourfully expressed emails, which would be quite difficult for the BBC to deal with.
John, as someone who's been around more TV and radio studios than's healthy for one individual, and there is no metric for this, but how egregious was the Panorama single quotes crime?
So the single quotes crime, in my view, was really serious. I think that the splicing together like that, it was idiotic. I don't believe it was done in that particular way with kind of malice aforethought. And I think it was probably some idiot who just thought the clip on itself, we fight like save our country, you know, was oh, that's a bit short. Can we pad it out a bit? Let's make it into a 20-second clip. This is the process, the mental process, I promise you, that goes on in an edit suite. And whoever did it hadn't thought it through properly. Someone then notices it and draws it to attention. And the BBC think, oh, well, I think we can probably, we don't need to do much about this. We can quietly get away with it. It then becomes a huge story. Donald Trump acts on it. And bang, you have now got the most, you know, potentially ruinous legal suit being taken by Donald Trump. This is the BBC's worst nightmare. And how it navigates this is really, really complicated. I think the BBC must be hoping the case gets thrown out before it comes to court on the basis that the thing was not published in America. Panorama wasn't licensed to be shown in the United States. But if it gets as far as, and you know, and Donald Trump has chosen the Florida jurisdiction, because that is, broadly speaking, a state which is very sympathetic to him. There are judges there who are very kind of, you know, well-intentioned towards him. You know, if it gets to the stage where this is going to be heard, then you've either got a massive legal bills or you're going to have to find a way off the hook. Because, yes, getting a libel case tucked through in America, the bar is very high. But you are going to be embroiled in the most costly legal tussle. And so, you know, if you're the legal department of the BBC and you're looking at it this morning, you're scratching your head thinking there are no great options here.
John Sopel, one to follow, and I'm sure you will, on the News Agents and the News Agents USA, the global podcast. John, thanks for that. See you around the studio soon, I hope. Coming up after the news, the dental crisis, a report earlier this month saying emergency help needs to be available. Some people being forced to travel 100 miles to see an NHS dentist. Dr. Mark Green is an NHS dentist in North Yorkshire. He told LBC,
there's a huge amount of unmet need. We know there's queues around blocks. He saw it in Bristol. And it's been going on for years and years, and we need more action.
A government initiative on the way. You'll hear more after this. 7:46 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Authorities in Australia have found explosives and Islamic State flags in a car registered to one of the Bondi Beach attackers. President Trump's followed through on his threat to file a defamation lawsuit against the BBC. And European leaders say they've made major progress in talks on a deal for peace in Ukraine. LBC weather mostly dry with sunshine today, but cloudier in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25 anti-clockwise, two lanes are closed because of an accident after junction 28 for the A12, so there are long delays with queues from junction 34 Lakeside. There are also long delays on the M4 going into town. There's a lane blocked on the elevated section before junction 2 for Brentford because a car has broken down. There are long delays on the North Circular and on the A13 approaching the Beckton roundabout. Two lanes are blocked on the roundabout. A lorry has broken down. On the train, southern services aren't moving between Crystal Palace and Tulse Hill or between Crystal Palace and Streatham Hill because of problems with the signals. On the tube, there are now minor delays on the district line between Earls Court and Wimbledon after problems with the signals earlier. And there are also minor delays on the Bakerloo line. That's because of cancellations.
LBC.
Turkey tummy. Fizzy reflux.
Sprouts.
Gastric trouble can feel like the festive gift that keeps on giving. At the first sign of discomfort, think Pepto-Bismol.
When you have nausea, heartburn,
Pepto-Bismol coats and soothes your stomach for effective five-symptom relief. Pepto-Bismol oral suspension contains bismuth subsalicylate. Always read the label.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Hi.
I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £500,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5pm Friday and you could get a call with £500,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal, and we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before eight, let's feature some of the emails, texts that are coming in on the doctor's strike. Anne in St Albans says it's disgusting, a terrible way to treat loyal nurses and to treat sick patients. Same subject. Mark says, I think the reason the young doctors, well, they're not all young doctors, I think they mean resident doctors, actually, overwhelmingly rejected the Labour government's offer is because, like the rest of us, we need to rid our nation of this leadership. The disruption in their minds is worth striking. Also, why didn't Wes Streeting, when he gave a 29% pay rise, make it subject to no more strikes? Obvious to anyone in the private sector who runs a business, says Mark in Wandsworth. Same subject. Rico in Glasgow. It's time this government paid resident doctors what they deserve and gave them the respect they are currently being denied. It's only by the current action that's supported by the vast majority of resident doctors that participated in a legal ballot that makes us all realise how important resident doctors are in our society. And lastly, this comes in. I just want to check I can read this. Yes, Sean in Hampshire. Our son has his interview with a medical school to study postgrad medicine. Desperately wants to be a doctor in the NHS. Already a healthcare assistant, part-time with the NHS, would be his dream. Can't help but worry what shape the career path will be for him if he's successful. More on that to come. In a related story, we all know there has been dental decay. No, not just, I'm afraid, in the teeth, but with the provision of services. And the government now is looking at ways to put that right, the so-called dental desert that leaves some of you having to travel, well, a report earlier this year said 100 miles for NHS care. Labour MP, Care Minister Stephen Kinnock, joins me now. What is it you and your colleagues are announcing, Mr Kinnock? Morning to you.
Well, good morning, Nick. I'm here at Imperial College Dental Surgery in West London. It's great to be here to announce.
I always get nervous when I see people in dental surgeries, but I'll go on. I'll let you get the drill. Go on you go, Stephen.
Yeah, they haven't put me in the chair yet, but maybe it depends how this interview goes, and then we'll see. But look, when we came into office in July 24, we discovered NHS dentistry on its knees, and we need to fix it bit by bit. These announcements today reflect the fact that the NHS contract doesn't work because it doesn't incentivise urgent and complex care. You know, we're living in a country where people are using pliers to take their own teeth out, or the case you mentioned of travelling 100 miles, or you know, the biggest cause of 5 to 9 year olds in our country going to hospital, Nick, is to have their rotten teeth removed. That is a Dickensian state of affairs. So we're changing the contract today. First of all, we're going to embed urgent care in the NHS contract, so they've got to do a certain percentage in urgent and complex care. Secondly, we're significantly uplifting the tariff that we pay for urgent care. A unit of urgent care at the moment, we usually you pay around about £40-42 for it. We're going to uplift that to £75. And then we're also creating a package for complex care, people who have a number of issues with their oral health, rather than coming back and having to come back and forth and do patch-up work. A single care pathway, the tariff will be between £250 and £700, depending on the scope of work. That is going to incentivise dentists to do urgent care on the NHS, prioritising that urgent and complex care. That's the way to fix the contract piece by piece. We're also doing quite a lot of radical thinking about the NHS contract and longer term reforms, but we of course need to negotiate those with the British Dental Association.
All right. We often hear from government ministers about the crisis they inherited. I think in this one it's absolutely true. You did inherit an appalling situation. Can you tell me, Minister, that in 12 months it will all be rectified, or where do you want to be? If we speak in the run-up to Christmas next year, where do you want the dental provision to be, Minister?
So I would like us to be in a position, these reforms will kick in April, because we're going to have to do some regulatory change now to change some of the tariff rates, and also we're looking to enable dental nurses to do fluoride varnish, other bits and pieces that take a bit of time. But from early April onwards, these reforms kick in, and I want us to be in a position where people who have an urgent need for dental care or complex care get that care in short order. At a dental surgery that is near them, that is convenient, they get quality outcomes, a good experience, good access, and I want that, you know, from 12 months from the 1st of April 2026, that is the position I would like to be in.
So 12 months, and define short order, Minister.
Within a week or two of within seeking an appointment, you get it, and you get the work on the NHS.
I don't know if you've had sight in a related conversation of a paper put out by the Policy Exchange today that suggests that dental vouchers worth £150 a year could help earn the what's called postcode lottery. This is backed by the former Health Secretary, Sir Sajid Javid. Obviously a response from you, Minister.
I haven't seen that paper yet, Nick, but we're open to ideas and suggestions. We have our negotiations with the British Dental Association, nothing is off the table.
The voucher could be used to pay for insurance or a capitation plan where a monthly fee goes towards regular care, such as checkups and hygiene appointments, allowing the patient to move in that fashion.
It's an interesting idea. One of the things that we've identified is that there's a lot of unnecessary routine care going on in the country. The clinical advice is, if you've got good oral health, you don't need to just go in for a checkup. You know, you don't need that more than about every 2 years. A lot of people are being called in every 6 months for NHS work. You know, one of the challenges with a capitation contract is that it can sometimes create a bit of a kind of closed shop, that you just see the same patients all the time. You're not really bringing in new patients, and you're not bringing in patients who have urgent and complex needs because the contract hasn't been incentivized to do that. So, you know, the old cliche, you know, to govern is to choose. We have chosen to prioritize urgent and complex care because I think that's the bit of the system that is really falling over. You know, we need to get to a point where both the urgent and complex part and the routine prevention part are really working at 100%, firing on all cylinders. We're a long way from doing that, but we are prioritising the urgent and complex piece of the equation first and foremost. It sounds like what Sajid Javid is suggesting there is a little bit more around the routine side of things, which is really important, but we've got to choose where we put our resources. We're making every single pound of taxpayers' money work hard and work smart. And that's what these reforms today are about.
Something that's not going to be firing on all cylinders is, of course, our resident doctors, the industrial action now looming. Would you use language such as self-indulgent, irresponsible and dangerous? Is the language you would use for resident doctors, Minister?
Yes, it is. This is dangerous, irresponsible, reckless. We gave them a 28.9% pay rise. Nick, I think most of your listeners would feel that was a pretty good deal. They've come back and asked for 26% more. That's just not living in the real world. We have a lot of sympathy with their points about not having enough work placements because of the crazy decisions taken by predecessors in government, particularly Boris Johnson, to open it up to doctors trained overseas. We want to change that. We've offered to have emergency legislation to change that. We've also said we will take action to enable them to do these strikes in January rather than do them right in the heart of the Christmas period. And they've rejected all that. And it's hard not to come to the conclusion that they're just hell-bent on doing maximum damage to our NHS, and that is dangerous, irresponsible and reckless.
The Conservatives, as I'm sure you're aware, have floated the idea of banning doctors' strikes. Would you support that, Minister?
The Labour Party will always stand up for the right of people to take industrial action, because we think that that's a really important part of an employee's rights. You know, we're the party that has come out of the trade union movement. I make absolutely no apology for that. That's not the right way to deal with this issue. The right way to deal with this issue is to just say to the resident doctors and to the BMA leadership in particular, you know, you need to come into the real world. You need to see sense on this one. We have made an extraordinarily good offer. And I tell you what, if you want any of the other parties in power, particularly to the right of the Labour Party, you're going to see, you know, Reform wanting to privatise the NHS, turn it on its head and create the kind of NHS that I'm pretty sure most resident doctors would not want to see. So what I would say to them gently is, be careful what you wish for.
Lastly, you might not be aware, or you might have heard, there's pressure now on the Labour Party concerning one of its most generous donors. That's the green energy tycoon Dale Vince, who put out a social media post yesterday, in a sense seeking to legitimise, in part, the Bondi killings, the Bondi murders, whatever you want to call them. Is he the sort of person you want giving money to the party?
Well, it is wrong, of course, to blame the Jewish people collectively for the actions of the Israeli government. Many people feel that the action the Israeli government has taken in relation to Gaza has been completely unacceptable and disproportionate, but it's completely wrong to in any way imply that the Jewish people collectively should be blamed for that. And I think that first tweet that Mr. Vince did could have given that impression. I think he then put out a second tweet clarifying. I think he should apologise for that tweet, and then, you know, in terms of his support for the Labour Party, let's see, let's ensure that he apologises, then I think we can review the position and take a decision on that basis.
And I know this is something you take personally very seriously, but why do you suppose when your colleague Ashley Dalton addressed the vigil in Parliament Square last night, when started speaking about not allowing anti-Semitism and this government wouldn't tolerate it, she was heckled and jeered by the crowd. Why do you imagine that is? The Jewish people don't seem to believe that, Mr. Kinnock.
It's sad. It breaks my heart, Nick, that the situation has become so polarised. It is clear that tens of thousands of civilians were killed in Gaza because of the actions of the Israeli Defence Force. And I think a lot of people are angry about that and very hurt by that. And there are communities in our country that are hurting as a result of the action that the Israeli Defence Force took in Gaza and the Israeli government under Benjamin Netanyahu taking that position. But it is equally true that there are a lot of people in our Jewish community who are feeling very scared and intimidated by what is happening, and to some extent the backlash that we're seeing because of what's happened in Gaza. We've got to find a way of coming together as a country, of enabling people to express their views about what happened in Gaza, but also to absolutely express solidarity and support for our Jewish communities. Both of those things absolutely can and should be possible, and I frankly sometimes fail to understand why some people don't seem to be able to hold those two thoughts in their mind at the same time. But that's what we've got to get to. We've got to get away from this polarisation, this binary position all the time, and to take a much more cohesive and community-based... We are all in this together. We live in this country together, and our security the security of all of our communities. There's no one community whose security is more important than the other. We've all got to get along together, and we've got to live together, and we've got to unite the country on that basis.
Thank you for your time. Care Minister Stephen Kinnock outlining the most significant modernisation of NHS dental provision in years. Thank you for your time. We'll get into that in more detail after the news. It's 2 minutes after 8, LBC headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, explosives and homemade IS flags have been found inside a car registered to one of the Bondi Beach attackers. Authorities are also looking into a trip Sajid and Navid Akram made to the Philippines last month. Mal Lanyon, the Commissioner of New South Wales Police, gave this update overnight.
There has been reports in the news about our two offenders travelling to the Philippines last month. I can confirm that they did travel to the Philippines. The reasons why they went to the Philippines and the purpose of that and where they went when they were there is under investigation.
The 15 people killed in the Hanukkah attack were honoured at a vigil in Westminster last night. The British Medical Association has rejected claims people will die as a result of the resident doctors' strike. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, told LBC last week patients could come to fatal harm as a result of the walkout in England. Resident doctors are due to begin the five-day strike tomorrow morning after rejecting a new offer. Dr. Shivam Sharma from the BMA has told Nick that deaths could go down during the action.
I want to be evidence-based. We know that senior colleagues, consultants will be covering this strike action. And we know that studies have shown that mortality rates do not increase. They stay the same, if not decrease, during strike action because we have those experienced senior consultants.
Donald Trump has filed a defamation lawsuit against the BBC over the selective editing of one of his speeches, the president seeking up to $10 billion in damages. The BBC previously apologised over the episode of Panorama, but said there is no basis for a defamation claim. European leaders have called for a multinational force to back any peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. They say there was significant progress in talks with President Zelensky in Berlin last night. Britain's unemployment rate has risen to 5.1%. Its highest level since January 2021. The figure for the 3 months to October is up from 5% in the previous quarter. It's emerged thousands of speeding fines on England's motorways and A roads were issued in error. National Highways says the fault, thought to be a software problem, impacted a very small number of drivers. They will be reimbursed and have any penalty points removed. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 97.51 after closing up 102 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather quite foggy to start, followed by a dry day with plenty of sunshine for many, cloudier with patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 12 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 5 minutes after eight on Tuesday, December the 16th. Fury over the tweet, a message put out by the major Labour donor Dale Vince, the green energy tycoon, in which, in part, he seems to try and find some kind of justification for those hideous acts in Bondi. We'll give you more details of that in just a few moments. In other news,
Britain is becoming a dumping ground for billions of pounds worth of Christmas decorations, toys and T-shirts tainted with child and slave labour. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive report.
We'll come back to that dental reform we've just been hearing about from the relevant minister and ask you. He has asked for a year from next April, and then you'll be able to get care within 2 to 3 weeks. But just how bad is the situation currently? Plus,
I've been driving in my car.
Are you one of the tens of thousands, yes, tens of thousands of innocent drivers clocked for speeding, fined because of a fault with the cameras that now, by the way, have been secretly turned off on the motorways? We'll give you more details later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Labour Party under pressure last night to cut ties with one of its biggest donors, the green energy tycoon Dale Vince, after he stands accused of blaming Israel for the Bondi Beach massacre. Now, he's given Labour more than £5 million and suggested that Israel's actions in Gaza were in part responsible for the attack on the Jewish festival on the weekend. He posted, and I quote, "Netanyahu said, anti-Semitism spreads when leaders stay silent. Nothing to do with Israel committing genocide in Palestine then. Netanyahu wants anti-Semitism to be a thing. It validates him. He acts to make it so." He did subsequently put out a second post in which he sought to clarify that, but of course the first one already went out. He also, bizarrely, put out after that first post, he posted in sympathy with, and I quote, the 10 million turkeys killed to celebrate Christmas. It's a turkey holocaust. He again, now regarding that one, he said that post was pre-written, scheduled to go out. And it was a, pardon my language, cock-up, not conspiracy. This man obviously has rather troubling views. How anybody could liken people eating turkeys at this time of year to a holocaust seems baffling. But what of that original one? The idea that in part, Israel and Netanyahu is responsible for the events at the weekend. I put this to Care Minister Stephen Kinnock, and I asked him, is Dale Vince the sort of person Labour wants to take money from?
Well, it is wrong, of course, to blame the Jewish people collectively for the actions of the Israeli government. Many people feel that the action the Israeli government has taken in relation to Gaza has been completely unacceptable and disproportionate, but it's completely wrong to in any way imply that the Jewish people collectively should be blamed for that. And I think that first tweet that Mr. Vince did could have given that impression. I think he then put out a second tweet clarifying. I think he should apologise for that tweet, and then, you know, in terms of his support for the Labour Party, let's see, let's ensure that he apologises, and I think we can review the position and take a decision on that basis.
Stephen Kinnock speaking. By the way, sorry for the poor quality. He was in a dental surgery, so it was a little bit echoey. We do understand that. Not normally that's the sound that we would want to give you. But he got his point across. To Alex Hearn, who's co-director of the Labour Against Anti-Semitism Campaign Group, what does the party need to do as regards Dale Vince in your view now? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, political parties haven't got a great track record when it comes to donors. In particular, I'm thinking about the Conservatives keeping Frank Hester after his awful comments about Diane Abbott. But I think that they should no longer take donations from him. Not that his values really align anymore. He seems more suited to the Green Party and Muhsin Ali. The idea that any group targeted for deadly attacks are responsible for the violence against them is the most disgusting gaslighting. And before the bodies were even cold, we saw Muhsin Ali online celebrating after October the 7th. So I'm not sure that Dale Vince is suitable for the Labour Party anymore. They should definitely distance themselves. They should stop taking donations from him. There is an explosion of excitement every time there's violence against Jews. At the vigil yesterday, people were attending and they were targeted with abuse. In Brighton, a rally was bigger and more extreme. And after October the 7th, before any response by Israel, don't forget, there were celebrations. The Palestinian Solidarity Campaign applied for a march against Israel on October the 7th, as Hamas was still murdering Israeli Jewish families in their home. So the rallies happen before any response to Israel, rallies which result in spikes in attacks against Jews. And the idea that something that Jews do thousands of miles away causes attacks against Jews in the diaspora is ridiculous, quite honestly.
Let's bring someone else into the conversation. Don't go, Mr. Hearn. Listening, Andrew Fisher, who's a columnist at the I newspaper and serves as a senior policy advisor for Jeremy Corbyn. Your view on that initial post put out by Mr. Vince. Good morning.
Good morning. I think it was ill-judged, and I think, as Alex said, doing so in the immediate aftermath when, as he said, people had just lost their lives in horrific circumstances was probably ill-judged. What he said, though, and let's just be fair to him, was not that the Jewish people were responsible for this. He said that Netanyahu was responsible for it, partly responsible for it, in that, you know, there has been a rise in anti-Semitic attacks since the genocide in Palestine. And that's undoubtedly true. That's not particularly a controversial thing to say generally. I wouldn't have said it at that time. But if you listen to, say, Baroness Manningham Buller, the former head of MI5, she told the Chilcot Inquiry that the Iraq war increased the terrorist threat to the UK. The actions of governments have impacts on people. Just last year, Sir Richard Moore, the MI6 chief, told the press the West faces a reckoning as war in the Middle East fuels radicalization. You know, it's not a controversial thing to say that foreign policy or actions of governments often rebound on civilian populations. That is unfortunately true.
Let's put that to Alex Hearn. It's not that the timing, Andrew Fisher saying, is undoubtedly wrong, but the broad sentiments, possibly there is something to it. Alex Hearn.
Well, it's just not the case. You know, an African government, for example, can do something and black people won't be attacked in the UK. And a government in the Middle East, a Muslim government, can do something and you won't find a massive spike normally in Islamophobia in Australia. What you have to understand is that the biggest spike in anti-Semitism came before Israel responded. The biggest spike by far. So that puts to bed the argument that what Israel does causes anti-Semitism. The people who are targeted, the group who are targeted for deadly attacks, are not responsible for violence against them. The people who do the attacks and the racists who attack Jews in the UK for stuff that happens thousands of miles away is just a pretext. This explosion of excitement that was caused by violence against Jews is just an excuse.
Let's get Andrew Fisher to respond to that. Andrew?
Look, I think we have to separate out the anti-Semitism, which is obviously exists and has existed for centuries, in the same way that Islamophobia and anti-black racism has as well, from terrorist attacks. We're not talking about general anti-Semitism here. We're talking about terrorists. And undoubtedly, the sort of terrorist threats that exist, in the same way that the heads of MI5 and MI6 in this country have said we face greater terrorism after our foreign policy, is undoubtedly the case. It would be bizarre if it wasn't. But Alex is right. We've got to tackle anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-black racism throughout the time, because it doesn't just spike when there are foreign policy decisions, but undoubtedly terrorist incidents do.
Andrew Fisher, thank you. Before I let you go, Alex, a quick word. You're, remind everybody, co-director of the Labour Against Anti-Semitism group. You may have been aware, you may have been at the vigil outside Parliament yesterday for the victims of the Bondi shooting, and you may have heard that a junior minister, Ashley Dalton, when she said that this government will do everything to protect Jewish people and will not stand for anti-Semitism, she was loudly heckled by, I would imagine, some Jewish people, I can't vouch for that, saying, you don't understand, go away and stop the marches. Has Labour still got a problem with anti-Semitism?
I think there's a distinct lack of action. I was at the synagogue protest, and I watched as the cordon, essentially, was broken constantly. And this protest against the synagogue was allowed. There is just not the political will to do enough against anti-Semitism, unfortunately.
Thanks very much. You heard first from Alex Hearn, co-director of Labour Against Anti-Semitism, then Andrew Fisher, who's a columnist with the I newspaper. It seems extraordinary. And you don't make the sort of money that Dale Vince has done unless you're bright in some way. But why is it that anybody can try and excuse the actions of a terrorist shooting innocent, mostly Australians, with events thousands of miles away? And why do they even seek to put the two together? How dumb do you have to be? 8:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Authorities in Australia say they believe the Bondi Beach terrorists were inspired by the Islamic State group. Donald Trump's filed his defamation lawsuit against the BBC, and figures released this morning show Britain's unemployment rate rose to 5.1% in the 3 months to October. LBC weather quite foggy this morning, then dry with sunshine for many, cloudy in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 30 for Lakeside to junction 28 for the A12 after an accident earlier, so all the lanes are back open now. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there are also queues from junction 21 for the M1 round to junction 19 for Watford. That's after there was an accident earlier, so all the lanes are back open there. There are long delays on the M4 going into town. There's one lane blocked on the elevated section before junction 2 for Brentford because a car has broken down. There are long delays on the North Circular and on the A13 approaching the Beckton roundabout because the lorry has broken down on the roundabout, so one lane is closed. And there are queues in Walthamstow. Chingford Road is blocked in both directions at the Bell. That's because of accident investigation work.
This is LBC.
For everyone who made your year, there's a moon pig, like your mum, who wraps all the presents way past midnight. Your hairdresser, who squeezed you in before the Christmas do. Or your neighbour, who takes in all your Christmas deliveries. So add stickers, photos and videos. All these special touches at no extra cost. In the UK's most personalised card. Because this Christmas, everyone deserves a
moonpig.com.
Delivery charges apply. To verify, see moonpig.com/personalised.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973 LBC.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
19 minutes after it, let's get to your reactions now concerning this Dale Vince issue. Charlie is in Couris in Scotland. Your view, Charlie. Good morning.
Hi there, Nick.
Hello, sir. Your view of this.
Hi. Yeah, I mean, the guy's words weren't exactly blaming Jewish people or even... Look, at the end of the day, what we're seeing in Israel is absolutely horrific. And you're going to get people that are going to retaliate. But I wouldn't necessarily suggest that blaming all Jewish people on this. This is a Likud party problem that they're having in Israel, right?
But the 10-year-old girl, the Holocaust survivor, the rabbi, all of whom lost their lives, they don't influence IDF policy or Israeli government policy.
I know, I'm not justifying it, mate.
Why would the idiotic Dale Vince seek to, in part, try and rationalise or legitimise those actions?
Well, I'm not justifying what he says. I'm not going to... All I'm saying is that there is obviously problems in Israel right now, and it's going to reflect on other parts of the world. I mean, take for instance, you see what happened somewhere in England a few months ago.
Go on.
A similar incident happened.
In Britain, do you mean? The synagogue in Manchester?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right,
I'm not saying that they should happen, obviously, but these things are going to happen. You're going to get crazy people that are going to be doing that over the world. But what we need...
This is because it's anti-Semitic. That don't kid yourself. This is pure when we had mad Dr. Shipman, who was killing his patients, we didn't go around beating up other doctors. We respect... And yet, as soon as something like this happens, it is pure anti-Semitism. It's it's an excuse for anti-Semitism. That is what this is. Plain and simple.
It's the same way anti-Muslim people, anti-Christian, anti-everything. I mean, if one religion does something wrong in the name of religion, what we've got to remember here is what Netanyahu's doing, he's doing that in the name of his religion.
No, don't agree with that at all.
No,
I don't agree. And I know, and I won't say their names on the radio, I know many Jews in this country who radically oppose Netanyahu, oppose his government, and wish that he wasn't in power. You can't say he's doing that on behalf of the Jewish faith, Charlie. That's just wrong.
No, but he is doing it on behalf of his religion, is what he's saying. They're saying that Palestine is Israel. They're talking about part of Syria. All of Lebanon, part of Jordan, part of Egypt. If you look at the Greater Israel Project,
Charlie.
If you actually look at the emblem that's on the IDF soldiers' uniform, you will see that this whole thing is all about Greater Israel. It's about expansion. It's about settler colonialism. They've been doing it for 80 years.
All right. I'm going to finish it there. I think you're wholly and utterly wrong. And within days of people, innocent people, a 10-year-old being shot dead on a beach in Australia, I can't see why you'd be thinking like that. Charlie, thanks, I think. Caroline in Finchley. Caroline, you're on the radio, 822. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Good morning. I just want to agree with the former caller, not the one just now.
Okay, go on.
That as of October the 8th, if you remember, and the video's been going round, outside the Sydney Opera House, they were saying, gas the Jews, right. Gas the Jews, on the 8th of October. And I think everyone's missing the point here. Mm-hmm. And the elephant in the room is the violent Islamists that have taken hold in our country and across Europe. This was discussed on Ali Mirage's show the other day.
Right.
And we saw what played out in Birmingham. They lied and they created a situation where they kept Jews out and nothing was done about it. They even lied about it in the Commons. It's being normalised.
Is that the football? You're talking about the football? Just to clarify, you're talking about the football match?
Yes.
Yeah, right. The Aston Villa. Yeah, okay.
It's all been normalised. We've allowed people to globalise the Intifada and from the river to the sea on the streets. Every other week, it has been normalised.
And this, you say, is effectively the comeuppance, if you will, or the price that now has to be paid. Is that what you're saying, Caroline?
Well, it's horrible to say it's the price has to be paid. As a London Jew, we feel incredibly uncomfortable watching our government, our Home Office, allow anti-Semitism being screamed on the streets week in, week out, globalising the Intifada. And what you saw in Sydney and what you saw in Manchester is globalising the Intifada.
And lastly, when you heard the government minister, I don't know if you've heard what's called the clip we've played, but she was addressing the vigil in Parliament yesterday, and she said this is a government that won't tolerate anti-Semitism. And I would imagine it's Jewish people, I can't vouch for that,
that called
her down and heckled
her. Of course.
Her. How do you react to that? Was it right to heckle her?
They're lawyers. What did Keir Starmer say? That he was going to embrace us all and look after us. Look what happened in Birmingham. He allowed the Islamists in Birmingham Council to dictate a false narrative. How are they looking after us? You tell me, Nick.
Caroline, thank you. It was. I suppose he could have intervened. It would have been pretty rare. It was West Midlands Police, of course, who now we know faked evidence to try and support the fact that those football fans could not attend the game at Villa Park against Aston Villa. It would have been pretty rare for the Prime Minister to overrule a senior police officer. It can be done, Caroline, but I think perhaps that one at his door is a little unfair. But your other points, thank you for your input. 8:25 almost. Let's go to other matters. And Britain is becoming what's called a dumping ground for billions of pounds worth of goods made by modern slaves, according to the government's independent slavery commissioner. Christmas decorations, kids' toys, T-shirts are being bought by consumers here in the UK that were made using slave labour. Here are the details. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, it sounds shocking that in 2025 we could be at risk of slave labour products that we could be buying on our shelves. And I spoke to Eleanor Lyons, the anti-slavery commissioner, and again, she told us things like Christmas decorations, you know, we're putting up our trees, Christmas pudding wrappers, plastics. All of these things could potentially have come from China, from other countries around the world, where they could be at risk of slave labour. And Keir Starmer, Nick, will have this issue squarely on his plate in the new year. He's heading to China, as we know, in just a few weeks' time. Now, Eleanor Lyons told me that we are at risk of being left behind. She points to legislation in the US and the EU. They are due to bring in new laws which will explicitly ban these products from being sold. And we know with so many of these companies, it is very difficult to trace their supply chains to where they came from.
So we know there's particular sectors and particular regions which are quite high risk. So, for instance, Xinjiang in China is an area which is high risk, where things like cotton, T-shirts that we buy, children's toys, Christmas presents, Christmas decorations come from there. But actually, it's also a problem that's happening across the world with 27 million people, children and adults, in forced labour.
And Nick, this very much ties into what Donald Trump is doing, of course, in the US. He's been very keen to levy higher tariffs and rules on countries like China. Last summer, America added goods including steel, copper, lithium and others as high priority sectors for enforcement under what's called the UEJA Forced Labour Prevention Act. So that helps prevent both those low quality goods and, of course, boosts American firms. America First is exactly what Donald Trump keeps talking about. They just can't compete with those cheaper goods here in the UK, and often these goods made by people forced to work, severely underpaid. I spoke with a victim yesterday who wanted to be referred to just as BT. He said that exploiters would do anything to continue to make their profits off victims.
Throughout the whole journey of being with an exploiter, you're just controlled with different mechanisms, and being vulnerable, you're taken advantage of. There's a lot of survivors who speaks about just the coercion and threats to family, and it's really, really dark. It's really, really dark, and people do really dark things to keep you silent, to keep you quiet.
Now, Now the anti-slavery commissioner is pushing us to follow the US and the EU. She is warning it is impossible for consumers to know where their goods are coming from.
You've got limited capacity to understand how that product is made. You need to be able to trust that the businesses have taken the right steps to look across their supply chains, and also that the government is putting in place the right regulations to reward good businesses and actually also to protect British businesses who are making products in the right way, hopefully, and also punish those bad actors. So I don't think the onus should be on consumers. Actually, the onus should be on government to take the right action to protect our country, like other leading nations have done.
And they've done some work with Cherie Belayer's firm, which shows the public do want action on this. 84% want a ban on all goods made with any kind of forced labour. Ellie Lyons also warns that Ed Miliband's net zero risk is... the project is at risk of using those goods too. We've talked about solar panels in the past. Now, the government says they're looking into this as part of their trade strategy. No decisions, they say, have been made on whether we will join those other nations in toughening up their laws. A government spokesperson told me, we are committed to rooting out human rights abuses and forced labour practices from UK supply chains.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting. Let's come to what you're saying on social media and the texts regarding the Dale Vince story. Laura points out, anti-Semitism has been around longer than Netanyahu. It's an excuse to murder Jews. There have been plenty of signs and our governments have ignored them. They are to blame for allowing so many marches and chants on our streets. Emma says, what does this have to do with me as a British Jew? I deserve to feel safe. My children deserve to feel safe. Stop taking sides. The government needs to protect everyone. One last one on this. This comes in from John. This man clearly has more money than sense. How on earth did he say that? What action are the Labour Party going to be taking? All right, keep them coming. Runo, you'll be the next caller on that. We'll take it the other side of the news and I can give you a decent run at it. We're also going to be hearing the other side of the news, the so-called lost generation. Are you or someone you love or know aged between 16 and 24? Well, the government now, or a commission, a review for the government is suggesting there needs to be a movement to address that lost generation. Are you in the 16 to 24 age group? Your child? Someone you know? Do they feel in some way lost? And also, after the news, a story that has already excited a lot of interest with some emails and texts. I've been driving in my car. It don't look much, but I've been far. Are you one of the tens of thousands who've been driving in your car and been wrongly fined and had points put on your licence by faulty motorway speed cameras? I'll give you more details on that story after this. It's 8.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
Authorities in Australia say they believe the Bondi Beach terrorists were inspired by the Islamic State group. They are investigating a trip they made to the Philippines in the month before Sunday's attack. Donald Trump has filed a defamation lawsuit against the BBC. The president is seeking $10 billion in damages over the selective editing of one of his speeches by the Panorama programme. Britain's unemployment rate has risen to 5.1%, its highest level since January 2021. The figure for 3 months to October is up from 5% over the previous quarter. LBC weather, quite foggy this morning, then dry and sunny for many, but cloudier with patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Once again, violent, murderous Islamism has raised its head. Imagine arming your son with a rifle, sending him out to kill indiscriminately men, women and children. What kind of worldview do you need to have as a father to even consider that as an outcome for your own flesh and blood? These people are not like us.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right.
Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, more on this speeding camera. What seems to be, well, for many people, it could actually, of course, have affected your job if you'd had too many points. You've been wrongly landed with more points. Certainly, I think it could affect your insurance. More on that with someone from the RSC in just a moment. But Bruno is in Southall, been hanging on for some time to talk about the Dale Vince social media post. Bruno, your take on that. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. I want to start by addressing those people who have called this morning to try and defend something that's indefensible. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you have to hate the Jews to the point where you want to change rules in the world that will not start affecting every one of us. So if we go with this narrative that when someone does something, there should be a violent consequence on other innocent people, it means that every single one of us here who are British citizens should be afraid for our lives, because there are people out there who think that the British government have caused chaos all around the world. Mm-hmm. So it means the next time I go on holidays, I should be afraid, because I can be a legitimate target to anybody that feels aggrieved by the decision of the British government. Is it not this society, this world we live in, where they say violence is not an excuse for anything? If your daughter or son is harmed by a dangerous criminal, you don't go out there, take guns to go shoot the members of your family because you feel like this is what they did to me. So why are politicians and foolish people, even if they have money or not, coming to make statements that will endanger the lives of every single person? And they are coming here to say Islamophobia and this phobia and that phobia. There is no phobia anywhere. Stop this nonsense propaganda and pushing violence to innocent people, because it can be you the next day that will be on the other side of the barrel where they are shooting at you and your own children.
It's pure anti-Semitism, lastly, in your book, is it, Runo?
It is pure anti-Semitism, hatred for the Jews. And this is where you see all these people call to make up stupid excuses, because it is not the Jewish people that are the only ethnic group in this world that have committed crime. The Chinese government killed many Uyghur Muslims. They did not attack Chinese people here on the streets of Britain or anywhere in the world. And many African leaders are committing different crimes, including other ethnic groups. You are not going out there slaughtering all the other ethnic groups. And it's always one particular group that always gets angry when something happens. We must address the elephant in the room. We should stop painting pictures. It is Islamic radical groups. When you do something, they take it to the extreme. Christians don't go out there shooting people. Hindus, Buddhists, any other ethnic group or religion do not do these things. Well, let's stop making false equivalents. Islamic radicalism is a problem, and it puts moderate Muslims in danger. Because for how long do you think people will tolerate this nonsense before it turns out into a street fight every single day in every single capital city?
It's hard to argue with a word of that. Because particularly when you said my antennae when moved into action when you started talking about Islamists, but you've covered that by saying moderate Muslims are now threatened by these actions. Runo, I can't take issue with any of that. That was first class. Thank you, sir, and I look forward to hearing from you again on other matters. Wow. Strong stuff. We'll return to that conversation in a moment. Now, calling all motorists, if you've been recently fined on those average speed cameras on motorways, thousands of you clocked for speeding due to a fault with every speed camera on Smart Mode. Yes, every speed camera, reports today's Daily Mail. The government could be looking at millions in compensation after it's been discovered a glitch in the variable speed camera systems on all Smart Motorways and some A roads for nearly 5 years. Police have now secretly switched off enforcement of all the cameras, reports the Daily Mail, because the speeding data can no longer be relied on. Meanwhile, more than 36,000 speeding cases have been axed so far, with court cases and those awareness courses cancelled by 22 police forces. For reference or context, there are 43 across the whole country. Over the weekend, ministers and police chiefs agreed a temporary solution, which was to switch the cameras off. Let's get more from Steve Gooding, who was Director General for Roads and Traffic at the Department of Transport and is now Director of the RAC Foundation. More details on the story in just a moment, but in layman's terms, just explain, because perhaps not everybody's aware, how are these cameras meant to work? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, this is quite a story, isn't it? The
huge.
Way that the system is supposed to work, we're not talking about average speed cameras, we're talking about the cameras that are fitted onto gantries where the speed limit is varied, it's changed over time. So this is something that's been going on for quite a while on the motorway network, to reduce the speed limit when the traffic is at its heaviest, to try and keep the flow going. So we've had this variable speed limit on our motorways for many, many years now. Mm. What appears to be the case is that the cameras that enforce that speed limit need to be synchronized very accurately, obviously, to the speed limit. And something was done, an upgrade we see to software or something, in 2021, and that put the synchronization just out of sync. And that's the cause of the problem.
How will a driver know if he or she has been affected, Steve?
Well, according to the material that the government has put out overnight, they think that it's something like 2,600 instances, which is a tiny proportion of the total number, but of course that's no comfort if you're one of them, and they will get in touch with you. So what they're saying is they're going to work through the police forces. You've talked about the individual police forces here. The police who actually enforce the speed limit, they will be getting in touch with the people who have wrongly been picked up for exceeding the speed limit when in fact they weren't.
In some cases, someone could have lost their job as a result of this, couldn't they?
Well, as I said, Nick, it might be a very small number out of the total. I think it's like 2,600 out of 6 million instances that have been enforced. But that's no comfort if it's you, and if the consequences have been serious for you, and someone might have had to notify their employer, there's lots of professional drivers out there, then this could be a far more serious matter.
Putting your former Department of Transport hat back on, what would the effect be on motorways if we can't do these smart motorway these cameras?
Well, I'm not variable surprised. Speed cameras, sorry. I'm not surprised to hear that the ministers have been locked in a room working out what the answer to this is, because of course, in order to have the motorways operating safely, which by and large they're our safest roads, we need people to obey the speed limit. So what we don't need off the back of this story is people to think, well, the cameras are turned off, we can do what we like now. It's very important that the enforcement is there so that when the speed limits are varied, people obey those and we keep the traffic flowing. So people will have been working out, I don't doubt, very hard to work out how to get the synchronisation back to the pinpoint where it needs to be.
Steve Goodings, Director of the REC Foundation, thank you for that. Nina in Newcastle, coming to you for your views on that Dale Vince story. Let's just feature some of your notes and messages and texts that are coming in. Salma says, you are in denial, you're stoking up hatred against Muslims, which encourages attacks against innocent Muslims. Nick, what are you doing? Well, you clearly weren't listening yesterday, where I said on two occasions, we saw in Bondi the worst and the best of humanity. The worst with the actions of the gunman, the best of the actions of that incredibly brave man, who is a Muslim, Ahmed Al-Ahmed, who's been visited in hospital and is an absolute hero. So I don't think possibly you've been listening. The call from Runo is getting a lot of support. This comes in from Jessica. What a great call. Finally, someone not afraid to say what this is. Islamic extremism. It needs to be addressed. Joanna, Runo talks total sense. We're sick of these fundamentalists committing atrocities globally, then playing victim when people retaliate. If you're still listening, there's a lot of support for what you said. Nina's in Newcastle. Nina, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. All I want to do is just draw a comparison to what Runo said in his previous call and to something you had an issue with earlier. So what I think Dale is trying to say in his tweet is that Netanyahu is an extremist, and his extremist views are what is causing danger to the very normal, innocent Jewish communities throughout the world. That is all he was trying to say. I don't think he was trying to blame Jewish people around the world for what's happening. I think you've said what you need to say as many times as you can now, and I think everybody's very clear on what your views are. I'm just trying to say that Runo said something earlier, which is that extremist Islamism, or whatever he wants to call it, is causing danger to Muslim communities around the world, and that's exactly mirrors what has been said in that tweet. Because what he's saying is those extremist people are now causing danger to normal, innocent Muslim communities around the world.
Do you honestly believe?
Because people will reflect on them.
Nina, do you honestly believe, and I quote from the Post, Netanyahu wants anti-Semitism? Do you believe that?
Yes. I do. I think it furthers his agenda.
So he wants to see 10-year-old girls
shot. I think it helps keep him in power. I think it furthers his agenda.
Nina, he wants to see 10-year-old Jewish girls shot dead on a beach in Australia.
I don't think he cares what the consequences are. And we know that because he doesn't care that a 10-year-old Palestinian child who is either Christian or Muslim is being murdered in Palestine. But this is somebody who doesn't actually care about innocent civilians. He just wants to further his agenda. I don't want to make this about Netanyahu because I hate the man. Right. But what I think we should do is make it very clear to people that if we're saying that we can't blame Netanyahu
for causing crazy people. This 10-year-old girl has nothing to do with Netanyahu, the Israeli government, the IDF or anything. It is an excuse to murder Jews.
Whatever it might be, the point I am making to you right now, isn't he? Of course. Why do you need to ask me that question? I'm obviously not going to justify the death of any innocent civilian, whether that be a child, whether that be an adult, anybody, no matter what their faith or their background is. It's never okay. The point I'm trying to make is what Runo said mirrored what that tweet said. That one person's actions cannot ever be a justification for what is happening to others. But you said you can't disagree. No. Your words were, I can't disagree with what Runo said, that I can't disagree with the word.
Because he did bring in the aspect of innocent Muslims being obviously jeopardised because of the actions of people who are no more Muslim than I am.
Can you not read between the lines and what that tweet was saying? Because that's exactly what he was trying to say. Well,
if so, why has he apologised? He says, my words on this subject were not intended to excuse or legitimate terrorism or any form of racism.
Well, there you go. He's done that then, hasn't he? He's apologised because clearly...
Why has he apologised if what he said wasn't wrong? Why would you apologise if you thought he got it right? Doesn't make sense, does it?
It does make sense because what's happened is his sentiments haven't come across on the tweet properly.
You apologise for getting something right. That's a new world, isn't it?
No, I really do think you're trying very hard to push something here. He obviously wasn't justifying the deaths of innocent Jewish people anywhere. Nobody would.
Netanyahu wants anti-Semitism to be a thing. It validates him.
A group called Narmod, which is a Jewish group. And, you know, this issue that you're trying to make isn't about Muslims and Jews, and we shouldn't be justifying the deaths or the potential danger to innocent Muslim communities because of the actions of crazy, crazy people.
All right. Nina, thank you. We'll see what others make of your views. Coming up after the news, they're called NEETs, not in education, employment or training, and there's a lost generation, addressed in part by Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden earlier this month.
This NEETs issue been rising for 4 years. It's also international, and I think this should become a Labour cause.
We're hearing more from a government commission on that right after this. 8:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Explosives and homemade IS flags have been found inside a car registered to one of the Bondi Beach attackers. A government minister has called on a key Labour donor to apologise for a social media post after the Sydney attack. And the British Medical Association's rejected claims people will die as a result of the resident doctor's strike. LBC weather, foggy this morning, then dry with plenty of sunshine, cloudy with patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 30 for Lakeside to just after Junction 28 for the A12 after an accident earlier. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there are also queues from Junction 20 for Kings Langley to just before Junction 19 for Watford after an accident earlier. There are still long delays on the M4 going into town after a car broke down earlier before Junction 2 for Brentford on the elevated section. There were long delays in Walthamstow on Chingford Road both ways to the Bell. That's after there was an accident earlier, so all the lanes are open there. It's slow in Teddington. Stanley Road is blocked in both directions. A car has overturned at Gloucester Road. And on the train, southern services are suspended between Beckenham Junction and Tulse Hill and between Crystal Palace and Streatham Hill. That's because of problems with the signals.
This is LBC.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia, and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like Full Disclosure with James O'Brien.
Join me for thoughtful conversations with fascinating people from the worlds of politics, news and entertainment.
There's no national procurement system for schools or hospitals or old people's homes.
There just should be.
We could love our farmers much more by having a Ministry of Food that we had in the war.
Plus, there is so much more. Global Player. Download it now for free.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 11 minutes before 9, and we'll come back to our conversation about that post from Dale Vince a little bit later. But let's talk of this so-called lost generation. Britain cannot afford to throw away its future to the national outrage of almost 1 million young people out of work and education, the head of a government review into the issue is saying. Alan Milburn, the former Labour Health Secretary, has said he's looking to radical solutions to the problem of 946,000 young people known as NEET, a rather disobliging term, but it means not in education, employment or training. And chairing the Milburn Review, Alan Milburn joins me now. Good to have you on board, sir. Thank you. Let's start with just a few definitions. What age group are we talking about specifically? Good morning to you.
Good morning. 16 to 24-year-olds, Nick.
And what are some of the solutions that you're going to be putting forward, Mr. Milburn?
Well, I think it's a bit early to say. We're just launching the review today, so calling for evidence, looking for solutions, I guess, but also looking to understand the nature of the problem. We know that, as you said, there's about 1 million young people. The numbers have been rising. Unemployment figures are out today, and unfortunately, we're sitting in the middle of a perfect storm, as you know, with really since the pandemic, the rates of employment amongst young people have been falling. The rates of unemployment has been rising. So something is going on in the youth labour market. It's probably been going on for a long time, in truth. So we need to understand that. I think about the phenomenon when you and I were younger of Saturday jobs. Everybody had a Saturday job, didn't they?
Yep.
And they don't anymore. So something is going on. We've got to understand. And then we've got to really understand what on earth is going on in the school system, the skills system, and this phenomenon of young people with mental health conditions, which is driving a lot of this, we think.
There was something introduced by the government, a youth guarantee for those aged 18 to 21. Your overview of that, Mr. Milburn?
Well, look, I think it's a welcome step in the right direction. It's good news, as is the reform of apprenticeships. But if you look at the scale of the problem against the size of the solutions that are currently on offer, I think everyone recognises, including the government, which is why it's commissioned this review, that we're going to need to go a lot further. If you think about these million young people, if they formed a city, Nick, it would be the third biggest in the UK. So we've got a problem here. And by the way, it's very much rooted in disadvantage. The areas that are most prone to young people being NEET, awful term, are places like Islington in London, Middlesbrough in the northeast, Knowsley in the northwest. So we know that this is a question of social inequality, but it's also a question of educational problems as well. So something's not right in the education system. We know that something's not right in the skills system. We've known that for a very long time. And we really need, as I say, some radical solutions to address this. And look, I think the government's asked me to do it because they know that if I look at this in the round, then probably there are going to be some radical and maybe some uncomfortable solutions that I'll be putting to government.
Are you accepting of the fact that many people might suggest some of the government's policies are acting against them in their best interests here. You could point to the last year's rise in national insurance, particularly in the hospitality sector, where a lot of young people possibly start their careers waiting on tables, working in hotels and restaurants. Have they acted against themselves in a sense, Mr. Melbourne?
I think we've got to look at exactly those sort of issues. And that's what you hear from employers, of course. So we want to get employers on board for this. One of the interesting things, by the way, is I don't know how people manage to get your email address, but they do. I'm flooded. It's fascinating because I think this is a visceral issue for people. People care about it. Look at the numbers and go, hold on. It's a million young people that whose futures we're writing off. If we're writing their futures off, we're writing the country's future off. Employers, mayors, local authorities, community organizations, schools genuinely wanting to do something about this. So I think, look, this can become a rallying call. I think it's got to become, Pat McFadden used the word the other day, that it's got to become a cause.
Yes.
I think it's even more than that. We've got to create a movement for change here, because it's not just the government's responsibility. You know, it's employers' responsibility as well to think about what they can do best by young people. And sure, they've got to be helped and enabled to do so.
I've just looked it up. We're almost the same age. I might have a year or two on you. But I remember when I came into the workplace, getting a job was relatively... I was in local newspapers. Getting a job was relatively easy. And if you were let go by the Kentish Gazette, with a bit of luck, you'd be on the Kentish Independent or the Kentish Messenger within about 3 or 4 weeks. It ain't like that anymore, Mr. Milburn.
It really isn't. Well, there used to be a ladder, didn't there? I mean, yep. You know, I know the stories are slightly apocryphal, but they're not of people in the media industry starting out as a messenger boy, yep, and being an editor, yes?
Exactly.
Well, that used to happen. So something.
So what, why don't we just don't have those positions? Do too many kids go to university, Alan?
No, I don't think it is that. I think it is. Look, we've got a, my view. Initial view is, look, and we're going to look at this very carefully, and it's going to be driven by data and proper analysis, because it's so easy to rush to a conclusion and get it wrong. And then what happens is you get into these vertical silos. Oh, we must do something about our skills, or we must do something about education. We're going to do something about the whole system. And I do think that one of the real questions is, what is the nature of the labour market? What is the nature of the jobs on offer? And are we creating, I know this is a terrible phrase, but are we creating career ladders in the way that you describe, where people can start at the bottom and work their way up? Because what happens, seems to be happening, is that people are getting into jobs on the lower rung of the ladder and then not moving up. So again, this is something that we've really got to understand, and that's why the engagement of employers is such a big part of this.
When do you report back, Alan?
In the summer, with an interim report in the spring. So I've got to get my skates on.
All right.
So I hope that we'll be talking about
this. Look forward to it. Before I let you go, reminding everyone, of course, you served as health secretary. Do you agree the resident doctors are self-indulgent, irresponsible and dangerous in taking this strike action?
Well, I think that's for Wes to comment on rather than me. So he's got the job now, God bless him. I'm sort of relieved I don't.
You don't envy him, clearly.
Yeah, and that's a tricky job, as you know.
Okay, we'll talk again soon. Good luck. Good having you on. Thank you. Alan Milburn is chairing the Milburn Review. He's a former health secretary, and I sense we might hear from him in the new year, 5 to 9. We're going to hear from Mike in Brent now, talking about that Dale Vince social media post. Your reaction, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Look, what seems to be forgotten in all of this is that the hatred of Jewish people by people like Hamas, extremists, predates the war in Gaza by a very long way. Mm-hmm. I don't think I can actually read the words out to you, because I would be probably committing a criminal offence if I were to utter them. But people can look up for themselves. The Hamas founding charter from 1988... Article 7, which specifically calls for Muslims, and I accept not all Muslims are going to agree with this, but specifically calls for Muslims to rise up and kill Jews. Now, that's from 1988. It's got nothing to do with Netanyahu or the current tragic war in Gaza that was started by Hamas. And when people go on a march and they chant things like globalize intifada, what do they actually think globalize intifada means? Because what I think it means is what we've seen in Manchester, what we've seen in Bondi Beach. That's what globalize intifada means. And frankly, chanting from the river to the sea obviously means wiping Israel off the map, which is what their dream is. So I don't accept that it's got nothing, that it's related to the current war. It's predates it by a very, very long time.
Mike, thank you for that. I will finish with that because I want to get one call in. Thanks, Mike. On the story we spoke about earlier, which is these fines with the variable speed cameras that should not have been levied on thousands of drivers. Steve's in Romford. Have you been affected by this, Steve? Good morning.
In the past, I've been affected by it. Fortunately, that was a long time ago. But I don't think a lot of people realise that you get extra place on your insurance for when you speed, and that stays on for 5 years.
Sorry, you get an extra place to... Oh, you mean your insurance is going to cost you more because you have to inform your insurance?
That's the insurance company place extra on your premium. That stays on for 5 years.
Yep.
So I'm wondering all these people that not have only had the fines but have been paying increased insurance premiums and how they're going to get it back from the insurance company.
Yeah. And also, of course, at the most extreme, someone might have lost their job because if they've got to be out, if he or she's got to be driving around a lot and they get those 12 points... They won't be able to drive. They could have lost their... This compensation bill could be very, very costly for the government, you know.
Massive. Absolutely massive.
OK, thank you for that, Steve. Safe driving. A couple of emails coming in on that. Emma in Jersey says, my husband Frank thinks he's a boy racer. I think he's been affected by this. Piers in Kent says, the county is riddled with these cameras. I don't know how effective they are. I do think sometimes they do regulate the speed, but often they'll bring it down from 70 to 60 to 50, and then suddenly it'll go back up to 70, and there doesn't seem to be any explanation. The road has been running fine. Well, all I would say, Piers, it could, of course, be that the problem has been dealt with, and you were quite a long way back in the line, the traffic jam or whatever, and that's why. But no, I have seen that, and, of course, that's a county I know well. All right, well, music means we will move on. And fixing dental decay, the first step to a new era for NHS dentistry. Care Minister Stephen Kinnock told me earlier in the show.
When we came into office in July 24, we discovered NHS dentistry on its knees, and we need to fix it bit by bit.
And we'll look at that in more detail and ask the dental crisis that you might be facing. Plus, the conversation we're having just minutes ago, a national outrage, a lost generation, 16 to 24-year-olds, NEETs, not employment, education or training. Does that apply to you or your child or your children? And how tough is it to get a job, particularly for that age group? Those stories and more will follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, authorities in Australia are investigating a trip the Bondi Beach attackers made to the Philippines last month. 15 people were killed when father and son Sajid and Navid Akram targeted a Hanukkah event on Sunday. Officers have discovered explosives and homemade IS flags as part of their inquiry. Diane Coveney-Garland, a journalist in Sydney, says one of the men reportedly had links to a pro-IS network in the city.
It's been revealed today that he was actually a volunteer street preacher with a number of links to Islamic State. And the father and son had actually recently travelled to the Philippines and stayed there for a month where they were undergoing military-style training.
A government minister's called on a Labour donor to apologise over a social media post after the Sydney attack. Businessman Dale Vince said the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wants anti-Semitism to be a thing because it validates him. The Tories say Labour should cut ties with Mr Vince. The Care Minister, Stephen Kinnock, told Nick that Labour will review the position after an apology.
The action the Israeli government has taken in relation to Gaza has been completely unacceptable and disproportionate, but it's completely wrong to in any way imply that the Jewish people collectively should be blamed for that. And I think that first tweet that Mr. Vince did could have given that impression. I think he then put out a second tweet clarifying.
Mr. Kinnock has called on the BBC to stand firm against a lawsuit filed by President Trump. He is seeking up to $10 billion in damages over the Panorama edit of his speech in Washington on January the 6th. The BBC has previously apologised but said there was no basis for a defamation claim. There are concerns the UK is becoming a dumping ground for goods made using slave labour. Britain's anti-slavery commissioner is calling for new laws similar to those in the US and EU to stop products entering the market. They include cheaply produced toys and clothing. Eleanor Lyons, speaking exclusively to LBC, has also warned about solar panels made in China.
There are people that are forced to work every single hour of the day. They're under constant surveillance. And we also can't send in inspectors. Everyone would be really uncomfortable having our race to net zero being at the expense of forced labour and slaves in those conditions.
Britain's unemployment rate has risen to its highest level for nearly 5 years. It rose to 5.1% in the 3 months to October. That's up from 5% in the previous quarter. Wage growth slipped back to 4.6%. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 21 at 97.30. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 13. LBC weather, foggy this morning, then a dry day with plenty of sunshine, but cloudier in the southeast. A high of 13 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card.
That's what makes it Christmas.
Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th, pork 6th of the 1st, gammon 13th of the 1st, salmon 1st of the 1st, Club card required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine on Tuesday, the 16th of December, coming up in this hour. Stopping dental decay, not your own teeth, but rather the whole of dentistry. A new era, a new start, as promised by the relevant minister. But I'll be asking just how acute the crisis is where you live. And another crisis, termed a national outrage, a lost generation. Speaking with the previous hour of the show, former Health Secretary Alan Milburn explained why he's launching a review into this.
Really, since the pandemic, the rates of employment amongst young people have been falling, the rates of unemployment has been rising. So something is going on in the youth labour market. It's probably been going on for a long time, in truth, so we need to understand that.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
According to the government, it is the biggest shake-up of the dental industry in generation. They acknowledge the problems that they have. They're aware of a report earlier this year that said in some instances, to get an NHS dentist, some of you are driving, or travelling, not necessarily driving, I'm sorry, travelling 100 miles. That would be, I think, from London to Birmingham, essentially, to go to the dentist. They also talk about how certain parts of the country have become a dental desert. Do you have an NHS dentist? Do you, as I heard some people say, it's just impossible. I'm afraid I'm just going to have to go privately. My tooth, my mouth, whatever it might be, hurts so much. I cannot find a dentist who'll take me on the NHS. I'm just going to have to pay for it. Raid the piggy bank, as it were. Well, the government says they're going to do something about it. In the first hour of the show, it was Care Minister Stephen Kinnock announcing another overhaul to the dentist service in this country. He started off by setting out the scale of the problem and how this latest plan will allow dentists to take on more NHS work.
When we came into office in July 24, we discovered NHS dentistry on its knees, and we need to fix it bit by bit. These announcements today reflect the fact that the NHS contract doesn't work because it doesn't incentivise urgent and complex care. You know, we're living in a country where people are using pliers to take their own teeth out, or the case you mentioned of travelling 100 miles, or you know, the biggest cause of 5 to 9 year olds in our country going to hospital, Nick, is to have their rotten teeth removed. That is a Dickensian state of affairs. So we're changing the contract today. First of all, we're going to embed urgent care in the NHS contract, so they've got to do a certain percentage in urgent and complex care. Secondly, we're significantly uplifting the tariff that we pay for urgent care. A unit of urgent care at the moment, we usually pay around about £40-42 for it. We're going to uplift that to £75. And then we're also creating a package for complex care, people who have a number of issues with their oral health, rather than coming back and having to come back and forth and do patch-up work. A single care pathway, the tariff will be between £250 and £700, depending on the scope of work. That is going to incentivise dentists to do urgent care on the NHS, prioritising that urgent and complex care. That's the way to fix the contract.
And sorry for the rather strange sound effects there. He was actually speaking from a dental surgery, which is why it wasn't perhaps as crisp as it normally might be. Is it going to work? Well, I can't think of anyone better to ask than a dentist. Dr. Paul Woodhouse is a dentist. He's based in Stockton-upon-Tees and joins me now. Thanks for coming on board, Doctor. Obviously, we only played you a little bit in brief of what we heard from Mr. Kinnock, but overall what you've heard so far or what you might have read, what difference is it going to make? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I'm not convinced it's going to make that much difference. I'm often accused of being a pessimist, but one thing he did say was there's no new money. So currently, the way that dentists are paid, we are given a pot of money every year to hit a certain performance target of units of dental activity. If they're going to pay us more to see urgent patients, that means that pot of money will get spent more quickly. We'll have less money to spend on routine care. The figures that are being bandied about as rewards for complex care don't even cover the cost of a set of decent dentures in terms of lab fees, so we'll still be losing money. It's not a reform, it's not a drastic overhaul, it's a tweak. It's great that they're trying to make an effort, and I applaud them for actually making a change, but the Health Select Committee in 2008 said the contract wasn't fit for purpose, and nobody's actually reformed it. They've just kind of shifted the deck chairs around. We need root and branch reform, and that's not happened yet.
Why are we in this crisis point, Doctor?
Honest answer? No one cares. No politician really cares about teeth. It's
really?
We're often referred to as the Cinderella service of healthcare, and everyone, until you get a toothache, you don't really value your dentist. You don't think, you know what, it's a great idea. Everyone forgets that we're screening for thousands of diseases when you come to see us for a routine examination. We're not just looking at your teeth and your gums. We're looking at for cancer. We're looking for signs of leukemia, malnutrition. Dentists often pick up signs of abuse in children. There's all sorts of things going on with a healthcare professional that sees you when you're healthy. So we get stuff early. We're a preventative service, but that's not really valuable to politicians because it's not sexy. It's teeth. You know, look at the media portray dentists is we're all, you know, Little Shop of Horrors and Marathon Man, and that's how everyone views us, and that's fine, but when you've got toothache, we're kind of important.
And yet Mr. Kinnock, or the Minister, did say it's tooth extraction is the highest cause of hospital admissions for a certain age group. I think he said 5 to 8. I can't quite remember. But
5 to 9-year-olds.
Apologies. Well, surely that's not sexy, but my God, someone should care about that, Doctor.
Yeah, they should, really, shouldn't they? But we don't have a preventative strategy in place. We have kind of ad hoc schemes in schools, but we don't have a national strategy in England. Scotland have got one. That number's been consistent for about, well, I've been talking about it in the media for at least 6 years. So it's not changed. It's not new information. It's not a shock. We know this, but nobody wants to grab the nettle.
What's morale like among dentists in the UK, would you say, or England?
In terms of NHS dentistry, it's non-existent.
Really?
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, you go to work, you want to help. We all get into this to help people. We're all caring people. And you find that when you are providing proper care for patients, you're actually losing money. You're essentially paying out of your own pocket to help fix somebody. And then you are hammered on every level from the local area team. The bureaucracy changes. The bit that no one ever talks about in the media is you'll get sent a demand that you have to do all this extra paperwork, which you don't get paid for. And if you don't do it, you're going to get slapped by the local area team. And we just, you know, I want to fix teeth. If this was, you know, the ideal world where, you know, the Star Trek universe, you had to work, there was no money, I'd love fixing teeth. I love helping people. But I don't want to go broke for doing it.
No, of course. Lastly, if your son, your daughter, niece, nephew said, I think I'll become a dentist, and they're 15, 16, 17, what would you say to them?
I have two girls, one 12-year-old, one 8-year-old. Neither of them want to be a dentist.
Really? Because that's your daughter's, is it?
That's my daughter's.
They just see what life's like for dad. Yeah.
They see how hard I work, the fact that it's not a 9-to-5 job, that I'm up till 10 o'clock most nights trying to sort stuff out for the business. They see the stress that I'm under, the lack of motivation I get from every government that I've encountered in my 25-year career. And they would go nowhere near it.
Thanks for your time. I'm sorry it's so gloomy. Good luck with the patients you'll see later today. Dr. Paul Woodhouse, dentist, talking from Stockton-upon-Tees. Let's get your voices on. We go to a different part of the world. Ryan's in Caerphilly. Is it bad in Wales? Good morning.
Yeah, hi, mate.
Hello.
What do you say about bad in Wales?
Provision of dental care.
Yeah, I think it's going to get considerably worse as well, to be honest. And that's just from speaking to my own dentist. So I pay private, I do, and I pay private for the best part of 10 years. And that's because I don't, yeah, I don't, I personally don't feel as good because of the waiting list to get to do things, to get things done.
Right.
And I think, you know, don't quote me on this because I'm not a dentistry professional, but I can just go off after speaking to my dentist, and he's already said there's new legislation getting passed in Wales where if a dentist wants to have certain, wants to actually do dentistry work provided by the NHS, they actually have to have certain systems in place, and the Welsh Government won't actually be funding for that. As a result of that, and you can even go and get some of your fact finders to actually look at this, go and find out how many dental practices in South Wales or in Wales that have actually opted to go purely private and not take on NHS staff and actually start removing NHS patients from their practice because it's now becoming an on-cost talk to them.
And sorry, I should have asked the dentist this, right? You're allowed to do that legally, are you? You don't have to offer NHS care as if you're a dentist.
Well, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a dentistry professional, I had a wisdom tooth removed, and I did it for the NHS. I had a 2-year waiting list because I had it done in a different dentistry practice.
Right.
I was seen as a patient of theirs. I actually had a letter from that dental practice then, who actually said, as of X date, we will no longer be taking on NHS patients and we will only be doing private. And that was an actual letter I had from them.
And just
I
to clarify,
asked my dentist about that then, and he confirmed that that's happening quite a lot.
And just to confirm, did you had your wisdom tooth taken out on the NHS or privately?
I had that done on the NHS because I needed to have it done under general anaesthetic. And
right,
if I wanted it done privately, it was going to be £900.
I was about to ask the cost that you have to pay. So wisdom tooth removal, would that have been including anaesthesia as well, £900?
Yes.
And typically, if you have a filling or whatever it might be, what sort of money would you be paying for that?
So if at the moment, I pay, with me being paid private, I pay a monthly cost of £19, and that covers all my dentistry work, and I get 2 hygiene examinations a year as well.
What, for £19 a month? Sorry, does that mean... if you needed a filling, that would cover that, would it?
Yeah, and that, they're the white fillings as well. So, but if you're on the NHS, if you're on the NHS, it actually costs quite a lot still. If I didn't have the insurance, it would cost me £120 for a black filling.
Wow, and you got all that for £19 a month. You've got a sensational package there. Ryan, good luck. May your teeth forever stay healthy. Lance, you'll be the next caller on that. Also coming up after the news... Do we make too many or not make? Is the sense that our children or young people have to go to university, where have the jobs gone? Is it the collapse, as Alan Milburn suggested, the Saturday job where you used to work in a shop or deliver? Well, nobody delivers newspapers anymore, do you? No point being a paper boy or paper girl. There's no damn papers to deliver. We'll look at that crisis, the lost generation, as it's been termed after this. 9:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Explosives and homemade IS flags have been found inside a car registered to one of the Bondi Beach attackers. Donald Trump has filed a defamation lawsuit against the BBC, and Britain's unemployment rate has risen to 5.1%, its highest level in nearly 5 years. LBC weather, foggy this morning, but then dry with plenty of sunshine, cloudier in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there are queues from Junction 20 for Kings Langley to Junction 19 for Watford after an accident earlier. There are also queues on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 30 for Lakeside to Junction 29 for Romford after an accident earlier on. There are queues on the M4 going into town, that's after a car breakdown earlier before Junction 2 for Brentford. In Finchley, there are queues on the A1 in both directions at Finchley Lane because the traffic lights aren't working. It's very slow in Walthamstow on Forest Road westbound from Fulbourne Road to Palmerston Road after an accident earlier. On the trains, southern services are suspended between Beckenham Junction and Tulse Hill and between Crystal Palace and Streatham Hill. That's because of problems with the signals. And southeastern have delays and some cancellations at Lewisham after problems with the signals.
The new LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Booking geniuses. Get free airport lounge access when you book a 5-star holiday with On the Beach. Feet up, fill your boots. Una drink, por favor. On the Beach. Book it now.
Conditions apply. 7-night minimum stay. Outbound only from selected airports for up to 6 people. Subject to lounge availability. Upturn at all protected.
peach.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
When you smile in.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best winter holidays start with the right airline. Book your family trip to Winter Wonderland now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
My coming to you, Lance, in just a moment, my thanks to Jessica, who I asked, can you stop doing NHS work? Jessica says, I'm a dentist. If you don't want to provide NHS care anymore, you just hand back your contract, which a lot of people are doing. Kyle's surprised by the prices quoted by Ryan. I don't know what dentist he's going to. It's around £20 for a checkup. An x-ray is £60 for filling, and anything else like root canal is £260, says Kyle. That's it. Lastly, Philip says, I live in Spain, recently had two wisdom teeth taken out privately. Total cost, €140 for both, and I booked it the day before. That's what, about 120 quid, I suppose, roughly. Lance in Bristol. Lance, what's the situation like in Bristol? Good morning.
Yes, hello. Well, we've spoken many times before, my guys as a cardiologist, with occasional a different name for various reasons, but I have had knowledge, obviously, as a doctor of the heart, about the importance of having your teeth done, but I put off my teeth being done.
Why is the teeth important for hearts? What is it?
Because the infection risk going in, causing inflammation in the whole body, can then set off inflammation in the arteries around the circulation, and of course if it affects the coronary arteries, then you have a risk of heart attack. So it's a marker of poor health, having poor teeth.
How interesting.
So that's very important, and also if people have artificial heart valves, then they have their teeth checked, because infection on an artificial valve could be fatal in a large percentage if it gets infected, because the body can't remove the bugs from the foreign material. It's all right if you've got just a leaky valve now, we're not to worry, but some people have antibiotics before they go to the dentist at the time, an hour before, to kill any bugs that go in when they're rummaging around with your roots and doing your teeth. Yeah. Now, in my case, I was doing a locum for various reasons in Glasgow in 2002 for a few years, and I used to commute weekly flying from Bristol to Glasgow, hire a car, and go and work in the Vale of Leven. And I joined the dentist in Dumbarton. They did some work on my teeth, and I cracked a few molars and fillings fell out. Mm-hmm. And then after a few years, when I was in Bristol, there's no dentist I could join. And after about 5 or 6 years, I got fed up with bits getting broken off, and I loved nuts and that. So I went to the private dentist, and the first checkup and a couple of things to be done cost me £300.
How much? Sorry, I didn't hear. Cost how much?
A few £100.
£100, right. Days. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, and then the quote to finish the work he anticipated was going to be about £2,000. So there was no way I can afford it for various reasons of my finances. So I rang up Dumbarton in Glasgow and said, am I still on your books? Yes. So they said, come up and have a check-up first. So I got the plane to Glasgow, got a hire car, went there, had the checkup, paid £90 for the sort of first checkup, mm-hmm. and then a few weeks later did the same again and got several fillings and things sorted out, tooth removed and everything for another £100. The total cost was cheaper than doing a single visit to them in Bristol. My wife had her daughter help pay for a partly. The reasons you may remember before, because of whistleblowing and things, I lost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So I'm a doctor who knows the reasons for it, but I've had to fly to Glasgow to get it done, and I might have to go back again because one of them's cracked off.
But I think, well, I hope you sort it out. But that is an absolute classic example. It's easier and cheaper for this gentleman to hire to fly a plane. I'm sorry, get a flight and hire a car, rather than go to a dentist in Bristol where he is. Lance, may your teeth be healthy. Thank you. And thanks for the input about the heart work as well. Every day is a school day, as they say. Now, talking about schools, what's happening to our children when they come out of school and then they become... It's a horribly derogatory term, but it does explain it, not employment, education or training. Do many children go to university? How easy was it for you when you came, when you were 17, 18, or as you came out of university in your early 20s? Well, this latest attempt to tackle this crisis comes this morning from the former Labour Health Secretary, Alan Milburn. He's launching the Milburn Review, looking into the rising inactivity among Britain's young people. There's 946,000 of them, by the way. He's promising radical policy solutions to fix the crisis, but what might they look like? Speaking in the previous hour of the show, he told me a little of what he's seeking to achieve.
But also looking to understand the nature of the problem, we know that, as you said, there's about 1 million young people, the numbers have been rising, unemployment figures are out today, and unfortunately, we're in the middle of a perfect storm, as you know, with really since the pandemic, the rates of employment amongst young people have been falling, the rates of unemployment has been rising. So something is going on in the youth labour market. It's probably been going on for a long time, in truth. So we need to understand that. I think about the phenomenon when you and I were younger of Saturday jobs. Everybody had a Saturday job, didn't they?
Yep.
And they don't anymore. So something is going on. We've got to understand. And then we've got to really understand what on earth is going on in the school system, the skills system, and this phenomenon of young people with mental health conditions, which is driving a lot of this, we think.
There was something introduced by the government, a youth guarantee for those aged 18 to 21. Your overview of that, Mr. Milburn?
Well, look, I think it's a welcome step in the right direction. It's good news, as is the reform of apprenticeships. But if you look at the scale of the problem against the size of the solutions that are currently on offer, I think everyone recognises, including the government, which is why it's commissioned this review, that we're going to need to go a lot further. If you think about these million young people, if they formed a city, Nick, it would be the third biggest in the UK. So we've got a problem here. And by the way, it's very much rooted in disadvantage. The areas that are most prone to young people being neat, awful term, are places like Islington, in London, Middlesbrough in the northeast, Knowsley in the northwest. So we know that this is a question of social inequality, but it's also a question of educational problems as well. So something's not right in the education system. We know that something's not right in the skills system. We've known that for a very long time. And we really need, as I say, some radical solutions to address this. And look, I think the government's asked me to do it because they know that if I look at this in the round, then probably there are going to be some radical and maybe some uncomfortable solutions that I'll be putting to government.
Are you accepting of the fact that many people might suggest some of the government's policies are acting against them in their best interests here? You could point to the last year's rise in national insurance, particularly in the hospitality sector, where a lot of young people possibly start their careers waiting on tables, working in hotels and restaurants. Have they acted against themselves in a sense, Mr. Milburn?
I think we've got to look at exactly those sort of issues. And that's what you hear from employers, of course. So we want to get employers on board for this. One of the interesting things, by the way, is I don't know how people manage to get your email address, but they do. I'm flooded. It's fascinating because I think this is a visceral issue for people. People care about it. Look at the numbers and go, hold on. It's 1 million young people whose futures we're writing off. If we're writing their futures off, we're writing the country's future off. Employers, mayors, local authorities, community organisations, schools genuinely wanting to do something about this. I think, look, this can become a rallying call. I think it's got to become, Pat McFadden used the word the other day, but it's got to become a cause.
Yes.
I think it's more than that. We've got to create a movement for change here because it's not just the government's responsibility. You know, it's employers' responsibility as well to think about what they can do best by young people. And sure, they've got to be helped and enabled to do so.
Alan Milburn speaking earlier. Paul in St Albans. You've got an interest in this, Paul, I understand. You have children. What ages are they?
19 and 21.
Right in the heart of this. University? Working? What are they doing?
Well, university, but one's on a placement year at the moment.
Okay. And what sort of fields do they want to go into?
One's IT and one's marketing. Business. General business, really.
And what are the job landscapes looking like for those two?
Well, I think they're both a bit nervous at this stage as to what the prospects are going to be when they get out. They've seen friends who are struggling to find roles.
And when you first came into came out of school or college, how easy was it for you to get a job? What line are you in?
Well, I run my own business now, but I worked in supply chain prior to this. But for me, it was relatively straightforward because universities had something called the milk round, and employers would come into the universities and do the first stage of the interviews there. So it was just a general, everyone just drifted into work, really, because everyone came to you.
I don't think it's like that anymore, is it? Sorry, no, have you got boys or girls? How nervous are you for your sons or daughters or whatever it is you have?
Well, as I said, my daughter's doing a placement, so I think her prospects will be improved by that.
Mm.
But my son's only just started, so he's 2 or 3 years off now, so we'll see if things change. But at the moment, yes, I think it's not looking very promising.
And lastly, the former politician who's chairing this review, Alan Milburn, what areas does he need to look at? What aspects, is there government initiative, government policies that could be changed, or some kind of initiative that could be begun?
Well, yeah, I've got a proposal I'd like to put forward, which is that I'd quite like to scrap the triple lock and use that money to fund a substantial increase in the tax-free allowance for maybe the under-30s or something like that.
Well, so I see. So as they're setting out, they pay less in tax, and that's offset by taking...
Yeah, they need to be renting houses, they need to be getting started, and you should be buying cars, and you know how difficult it is when you first start your career.
Of course it is, yeah, absolutely.
And I think we should be supporting our youngsters.
What if a pensioner, though, he or she needs that inflation rise in their pension because they're obviously on fixed income?
Well, I think there's probably some support in place other than pension, and if there isn't, then we could put something in place to cover that small cohort of people who are going to be really struggling.
We really have got to help the younger people. Good luck with your children as and when they get into the workplace. Paul, thank you. Madeline's in Tunbridge Wells. Madeline, what do you say to this? Good morning.
About 6 years ago, when my 24-year-old was 19,
yeah.
By the age of 19, she'd been made redundant 3 times in retail.
Oh, my
you know,
goodness.
It just knocked her, like, thinking, what, why bother?
Right.
She first thought it was mother care. She had a job when she was at school, obviously, at the weekends.
Yeah.
Mother care. Then it was Jack Wills. Jesus. And then it was Topshop.
Oh, good gracious.
She'll never do retail again.
Oh, the poor young woman. They've
I know.
Folded.
I thought it was just, heart, you know, your heart goes out to them. Because she tried, and she really tried. And now my youngest, who's 18, has applied for so many jobs. So we kept on saying to her, you have to get a job. You've got to work.
Mm.
She's had nothing. And now she's at uni in Manchester, and she tried to apply. She applied for loads of jobs before she went up there, you know, in bars and things like that. And she's had nothing.
Literally nothing at all?
No, nothing.
And
she's,
what is
she's
your
not applying at the moment because she's...
She's at university, yeah.
And it's just because of other circumstances. But, you know, she heard nothing back from anything she applied to.
What is your 24-year-old daughter doing now?
At the moment, she's... she went travelling a couple of... She came back about a year ago, 18 months ago. So at the moment, she's working in a private healthcare company, just helping out in theatre. Okay. She's not got a... She's looking to go into a career next, so...
Does she know what she wants to do, what the career might be, Madeline?
I'm not going to say because she wants me to keep it quiet.
All right, let's finish there. Give your daughters my best wishes and wish them well in their employment career. Thank you, Madeline. Simon, you're going to be talking about that and some others. But it's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. And it's News Headlines, Thomas Watts.
Explosives and homemade IS flags have been found inside a car registered to one of the Bondi Beach attackers. Authorities are also looking into a trip that Sajid and Navid Akram made to the Philippines last month. Donald Trump has filed a defamation lawsuit against the BBC over the selective editing of one of his speeches. A government minister has urged the broadcaster to stand firm in the face of the $10 billion claim. Britain's unemployment rate has risen to 5.1%, its highest level since January 2021. The figure for the 3 months to October is up from 5% in the previous quarter. LBC weather, quite foggy this morning, then dry with sunshine, cloudier with some patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season. For nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolux. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Into more of your calls, Simon. I think your daughter's right in that age group. I hate that expression, neats, but it has been used. Let's just see what you're saying on social media and the texts that are coming in. This from David. Pensioners now work the Saturday jobs. I didn't know that. And there are many Saturday jobs that are a lot more scarce. Paper rounds, for example. The only person delivering papers I've seen is someone in their 50s. Good Lord. Same subject. This from Philip. We better get used to the idea of people not having work. AI is here. It's removing jobs at some pace. I'm in the film industry. It's already starting to replace creative jobs. I don't understand why the government's surprised with the hike in national insurance companies are scaling down and not recruiting when staff retire or leave. I do think that's going to be a real issue, by the way, that NI. We still haven't felt the full effect of that. Max says, target neat kids. I mean, those without qualifications, they should be able to access resources and jobs specifically. We've been to the Career Centre. They're useless. Other organisations are offering online courses. They're absolutely useless. Too much money is going to the wrong so-called organisations. Simon in Kingston, we're talking about your daughter, I think. Is that right? How old is the young woman?
Good morning. Morning. She's 22.
Okay.
And she's just finished Edinburgh University.
Yes. Oh, she's a bright young woman. She went to Edinburgh. That's a great university. Well
done. So she's just finished and she's come back. She's basically looking for work. She used to work as a nanny before. Mm-hmm. And previously, last year, there was loads of work with obviously nice families, but now there's very little. Mm-hmm. But part of the reason for me calling them May is I've got strong contacts in Poland, and I do property developing out there, did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What they have out there, they have a fantastic scheme where all young people are basically, they can be subsidized to go and work for new companies. So if you've got a new company that's under 5 years old, mm-hmm. and you employ people under I think it's 23 years old, mm-hmm. you either get either all or two-thirds of their salaries paid for by the government.
Wow. Is that, that's capped at a certain amount, I'm sure, isn't it?
Yes. Obviously, yeah. You can't be unlimited, yeah. Yes. But yeah. And now, obviously, you could do something similar here, where you could say that the money that's being used to pay for their unemployment benefit, whatever it's called, universal credit, you could say, right, we're going to pay an employer, a new employer, who's trying to get off the ground, we're going to pay their money to go towards that salary. I know, brilliant.
Yeah. How long are they on the government payroll? How many months do they get?
I think it's for like at least a couple of years.
Is it really?
But the key thing is it allows the new company to develop and get to a point where they can then, you know, where they don't qualify. I think it's a 5-year limit for them.
Do they, obviously they wouldn't be called this, but do they have a sort of neat issue, do you think, in Poland or not so much?
Not at all. No, with that policy they had, nearly all youngsters were employed, and it was a great way to employ them.
And typically, is it the construction industry they go into or just about everything?
No, it was everything. The reason I saw this was it was a ski resort. It was a fantastic ski resort. We went out for a meal on a Monday evening, and there was all these people sort of stuff. And I was chatting to my partner. I said, how on earth can they afford all this? And he explained all the system, and it was like, wow, what a great idea. It was a brand-new ski resort that, you know, they were trying to build up the business, and they had all these people. But instead of sort of, you know, having it empty, mm-hmm. they had it fully staffed. Fantastic. And it was fantastic. Yeah.
Lastly, what is it your daughter wants to do? Do we know yet?
Yeah, she's a graphic artist, or graphic designer, and that's obviously what she wants to get into.
And is that going to be really hard or really difficult, or their jobs around? What's that industry like, Simon?
It's very difficult because, I guess, with a lot of computer and AI, you know, a lot of people are doing it themselves. You know, before, if somebody needed a poster design, they called a graphic designer, but now you can pretty much do it yourself. So I think it's going to be quite tricky for her.
Give her my best in her career, Simon. Thanks for sharing so much. Have a good day down there in Kingston. Lisa's in Stamford Hill. Your story, Lisa. Again, this is your daughter. Again, this is the daughter we're talking about.
Yes, hello, good morning, Nick. Hello. Yes, well, my daughter is left and after A-levels and really has her heart set on an apprenticeship. My son is becoming an accountant through apprenticeship scheme. And it seems that for accountancy, there's tons of stuff. But
when you say tons of stuff, tons of jobs?
There's loads of apprenticeships without a degree needed.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
So finance, there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of companies that, I mean, there's tons of competition. Mm. You've got to jump through hoops still. Mm. But for my daughter, who didn't want finance, she wanted to go into property.
What do you mean?
Well, this is the thing. She wasn't sure. We have a few friends who were very into, careers advice. And the more we spoke to her, we said, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" Because your background is more in health and social care, and her sort of background was more like health and fitness and mm-hmm. social care. And she said, no, I want to be in property. And I said, what do you mean be in property? Mm. And we sort of really explored it. And she was looking at more property management, facilities management, that sort of thing. I said, she really wants to listen to people, shouting down the phone at you all day, you know, that my plumbing's not working or whatever.
Yeah.
But she did look into it. She went round. She did the whole thing with the CV. It turned out her CV was too nice, you know, like AI based. And we sent her to an organisation. She got her CV.
Sorry, what do you mean by too
checked.
Nice? What does that mean?
Well,
I'm sorry.
Like not really realistic for a 19-year-old. It didn't sound like a 19-year-old. I mean, all the kids, they're going to AI for their CVs.
Right. Ah, right. Okay.
And
got it.
You get bombarded by CVs that do not sound personal.
Okay. So what's happening with her? How old is she now then? 18?
She's 19, going on 20.
Has she got work?
She got very, very very sort of, you know, rejection after rejection.
Of course, it's horrible for kids. Well, it's horrible for anyone.
So all her friends are at uni. She thought she could get an apprenticeship and avoid all the debts and avoid doing something she really didn't need to do. If she just wants training, she wants a career. But no one's offering it, and she said, I'm looking for a degree. Well, she turned around the other day and said, I'm going to look for a degree. I'm going to go next year to a uni, and she'll stay at home, and she'll just go in London somewhere. But my mother included, we all felt very upset for her, like, oh, I have to do a degree. It's like 3 years of your life, and she could be working. She could be earning.
It's never for me to tell anyone how to parent their child, but do you think she should do a degree just because she can't find anything else? Does that make sense, Lisa? What do you think?
Well, yes. She's being put at. She's saying, this is plan B. Okay. I can't get an apprenticeship. I'm going to look for a degree.
Well, everyone needs a plan B, and sometimes you need a plan C. Again, my best wishes to Lisa. Thank you. I hope it resolves. That is the reality. You know, it's damn tough out there for these kids. Philip's in Marlow. What level of sympathy do you have for these kids, Philip? Morning.
You're going to hate me for this, Nick, but very little.
We have
a system that provides schools, universities, the armed forces. There are plenty of opportunities.
Well, not everyone
there.
Wants to go in the military, of course, Philip.
Well, no, and neither should they, but it's an option. And people should take these options because they're not going to get their AI wonder projects sorted out in short order.
I don't know that the military would want people coming to them because they can't find anything else. They want someone who is dedicated to being there.
That's always been the case. of recruits for the armed forces, but it's not just them, it's the universities, it's schools. There are plenty of opportunities to better oneself. The problem is not so much the lack of opportunities, it's the lack of jobs once they've finished.
As we just heard, Madeline's daughter, I mean, enormous problems for these kids.
Yeah, 19 years old and putting in a CV that has expertise in AI, it's not going to cut it.
Well, she probably doesn't want to go into the military, though, in reality. Philip, thank you. Let's end it there, because obviously I don't want to upset that young woman, and I wish her nothing but good luck. Philip, thank you. We talked about this problem, or indeed the person who did some construction work or had a running company in Poland. Lukat says, we don't have the neat problem in Poland because of massive staff shortages. Many of us are here in the UK. He has put a smiling emoji there. And the benefit system is non-existent. You cannot live on peanuts. Andy in Wickford in Essex, my twin daughters are 16 and are going through college. I agree, Nick. Part-time jobs at the weekend are very hard to get. My daughters were lucky enough to get a job at a leading supermarket. After starting at the store, they found out that 482 people had applied for the two positions, the majority of them being young people. This from John in Maidstone. The Lost Generation, the Melbourne Review, should look what was available in the 1970s. Woodwork, metalwork in schools, technical colleges, and all the technologies, IT, AI, plus bricklaying, plumbing, electrician skills we need for the 1.5 million homes they want to build. Well, of course, it's doubtful whether they'll actually get to that figure, but keep them coming. Philip, thank you for that call. Let's move on to, we're also talking about dentistry and the fact that the government is promising to cure the dental decay that has gone on for a generation. Kevin's in Hereford. Kevin, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Good to have you on, sir. What's made you reach for the telephone today?
Well, I'm 66 now, and right. I was with a dentist nearly 20 years in my town in Harryford. And, right. I had a text sent me one day, and they said that they were closing their books on NHS patients.
Uh-oh.
And basically I had to look for another dentist. So I spent nearly 2 years.
Oh, my God.
Looking for a dentist. I finally got one, and I've got one in my town of Harryford, and they are absolutely excellent. They're brilliant.
And this is an NHS dentist?
Yes, it is, yes.
So were you unable to have dental checkups for 2 years?
Yes.
Man alive. And how easy is it to get an appointment? If you, I hope you don't, but if you had a toothache or something like that, how long would it take you to get to see that dentist now?
I don't know, because I haven't quite been in that position yet, but I have regular checkups now every 6 months, and I have had treatment, and that's been great. So, right. So far, so good.
Be well. Kevin, first timer, thank you. Do call me again soon. Joanne says, I'm 40, I've lived in Maidenhead my entire life. Neither I nor my family, parents, siblings, cousins, etc. have ever had an NHS dentist. Getting an NHS dentist feels completely impossible. I've had annual checkups with a dentist since around the age of 3 or 4, always paid for privately. Stephen in Chelsea, I was quoted £1,200 for root canal from my dentist in Chelsea. I went to Istanbul 3 years ago, and a professor of dentistry did a wonderful job for £175. Dentists overcharge. Be very, very cautious. I'm not suggesting this, well, you haven't named it so I can say it, but you hear people going for medical treatment in Turkey, Istanbul, cut price surgery, and sometimes, well, it's just not up to scratch, but clearly yours was. I'm delighted to say it's 9:45, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Explosives and homemade IS flags have been found inside a car registered to one of the Bondi Beach attackers. A government minister has called on a key Labour donor to apologise for a social media post after the Sydney attack. And the British Medical Association's rejected claims people will die as a result of the resident doctor's strike. LBC weather, foggy this morning, then dry with plenty of sunshine, cloudy with patchy rain in the southeast, a high of 12 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Arkies on the M25 clockwise from junction 10 for the A3 to junction 11 for Chertsey after a car broke down earlier, so all the lanes are open now. The North Circular southbound is partly blocked after the Barking flyover because of an investigation, so there are queues from the Ilford flyover. In Finchley, there are queues on the A1 in both directions at Finchley Lane. That's because the traffic lights aren't working. In St Paul's Cray, Watery Lane westbound is partly blocked at Cray Road for emergency repairs, so it's slower going through. On the trains, southern services are suspended between Beckenham Junction and Tulse Hill, and between Crystal Palace and Streatham Hill. That's because of some problems with the signals. And Southwestern Railway services are suspended between Teddington and New Malden because of problems with the signals.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The NHS is creaking and resident doctors are going on strike, and Simon Marks joins us to report on the latest abominations from the White House.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Back the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as maths, English and science, I study creative subjects such as media, drama, art and design, business and music technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
At YouLiveProsperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit YouLiveProsperity.com.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's stay with neat. Susie says, my son is a neat. He's autistic and was recently diagnosed with OCD. His inability to enter employment, education or training is a direct consequence of his experiences of being failed by the education system. It took 4 years of him being unable to attend before he was awarded an EHCP, a mentioned healthcare plan, educational healthcare plan, sorry. But the damage was done and he was severely traumatised by his experience. I'm sorry to hear about that. Max says, all the government needs to stop offering apprenticeships in childcare. It's child labour. Why would anyone want a child looking after their child? Nurses should have a minimum employment age of 25. Norma says, my daughter is in hospitality. She's 18. During a week, she can have 4 to 5 shifts and then gets cancelled hours before due to tables cancelling. She is disposable, it says here. She's disposable? And shifts are given to full-time workers. I think easily dispensable, I think you mean. Restaurants cannot afford the NI and price hikes. It leaves my daughter hanging around for the day when they were ready for work. Lastly, before I come to you, Dave, Maria, I'm 24, graduated in the summer with a first-class psychology undergraduate degree. It took me 6 months to find a part-time job, as I'm too qualified for retail, but I do not have enough experience for full-time roles relating to my degree. Many of my peers are also stuck in retail with no hope of progression or promotion, or unemployed, searching for full-time jobs. Dave's in Romford. What do you want to add to this conversation? It's desperately depressing, this generation, isn't it? Good morning.
Well, it is, Nick, but there is a way out for a certain amount of them.
If here we go.
Take it.
Come on.
Right. Just get in touch with your local authority, Building Control, LABC, right? They are offering 2 to 3 year apprenticeship. I wouldn't call it apprenticeships, traineeships. They put you through uni. It's all paid for. You have got no bills at the end of it. You're on wages. You get a great starting salary to start off as a trainee.
What is the salary?
In the high 20s. 20,000 a year.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And then when you qualify, that jumps up to 32,000-33,000 a year.
Right.
You're working for a local authority.
Right.
Doing building control.
What does that mean? Sorry, does that mean building itself, or what does building control mean?
No. What you're doing, right? Have you ever had an extension done on your house?
Yes.
Right, you had to put an application in.
I know what you mean. I had to get an architect, and then they have to come around and check it's not going to fall over or something like that.
Right, and the building control surveyor, who works for a local authority, which this is training for, they come around to ensure that the work is being carried out in compliance with the current building regulations.
Yeah, and they sign off on it effectively, don't they?
You get a completion certificate from the local authority.
Yeah.
But they are crying out for people to take up apprenticeships.
How do you know this?
Because I'm a building control surveyor.
Oh, because you do it. I see. Okay.
I'm 71, Nick. I'm coming to the end of my time now.
Right.
It's a young person's job. It really is. Unfortunately, over the years, as people retired from the job, local authorities have never sort of recruited. And now, all of a sudden, there's a huge spurge of getting people in.
And they need folk in. Hey, let me ask you this. Do you also look at building of houses as well?
Yes, the high-rise buildings, like HRBs.
Dave.
Like, it's all come back to the Grenfell.
Excuse me. When I talk to the housing minister or the housing secretary, they'll always tell me, we are going to hit our 1.5 million homes target for the lifetime of this parliament. We had a slow start, but we're picking up at speed. We will get there. This is the industry. You're 71, so obviously you've been in it for a few years now. Are they going to hit that target?
Whether they hit that target or not, I couldn't comment on, but they are getting lots of properties done. We're in Havering. We've got several big areas of redevelopment that are coming through, and it's happening. It's happening throughout the country.
Right.
It really is. But please, any young person who's looking for a lifetime career, and don't forget, it's a local authority. You get a pension with it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you get everything with it.
What was it again? LABC.
Local Authority Building Control.
LABC.
If they go on their website and look at the trainee program, the entries, yeah, you'll get everything.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave. Good luck in your years that you want to carry on working. Lynn in Devon, this Milburn will not solve anything. He's part of the problem. The single issue is called entitlement. Society has told successive generations their wishes are more important than anything else. The idea you have a work ethic is considered ridiculous. Employers are now expected to be parents of toddlers. We have numerous stories of young doctors who want to work 9 to 5 and not a minute longer. Alex in Glasgow, we run a small family manufacturing business. Our apprentice has just completed his course, is now fully qualified. We aren't taking on a new apprentice because the NI hike for the business swallowed the salary for it. I wonder if Labour will consider that with their investigation. It was something I directly put, actually, to Mr. Milburn. Tracy says, my daughter works in hospitality. She's 21. She got no shifts with one job, 0 hours. Got let go from her main job just before her 21st birthday. Her only job at the moment is working match days at our local football club. She's applying for jobs every day, but gets nowhere. Well, I'm afraid, Tracy, she is not alone. We'll probably wrap by coming back to the subject with which we started the hour, which is dentists, and a promise from the government to fix the dental decay across the whole of the country. Nick's in Louth has been hanging on the line. Nick, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. It's really just anecdotal. Myself, my mother and father joined the dentist in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And we went there up to being COVID. Obviously, at that point, you couldn't access or go in there if you had any problems. Mum and dad are now 92, 93, so therefore, obviously, they were seen as being vulnerable and continue to go to the dentist. Over the period of time, a couple of years went by, and I thought, well, you know, it's about time I went back. I rang up, and they said, who are you? So I said, well, I've been coming here for the last 40 years. And in the interim time, basically what had happened is that the original dentist we started seeing in 1981, it was his father's practice, and he'd continued, he'd only newly qualified when we started.
Right.
He's actually still there practicing, but the father sold the property to, I don't know if I can mention it, but, you know.
I probably not. Are you going to say rather disparaging things about it?
No, not at all.
Oh, right, okay,
No. The my dentist, obviously.
Okay, yes, I've heard of that.
I've bought all of these businesses. But basically, the stroke of a pen, that they basically just decided that any NHS client, they weren't going to do it. But it was just this thing of being there for 40 years and the same dentist still practicing there.
For 40
today.
Years? You had the same dentist for 40 years? Literally the same man or woman?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
And my mother and father still go and see him now.
Goodness. How old is your...
5, 6 years.
How old is your parents' dentist? I'll get that in a minute.
He will be... Well, I was 17 when I went there, and he had just newly qualified, so he'd be probably about 67, 68.
Okay, good luck to him. Imagine... Thank you. Best wishes to your parents, Nick. Imagine spending your entire working life looking in people's mouths and sort of rooting out tooth decay. And also, we learn now, looking for possible cancer, leukemia, heart conditions, all sorts of things. It's a hell of a job, isn't it? Andre's in Bury St Edmunds. Andre, you're on the radio. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Hello,
that's the most intimidating good morning in radio show.
It's not.
It makes the most eloquent person freeze.
That's no, it's not. Come on. Hello, then. Let's use it like that. G'day, sport. Yes. G'day.
Yes. And so I'll tell you my personal experience with the dentistry here in the UK.
Yeah,
it's I've had a lot of work that needed to be done, and I've just kind of postponed the infamous trip to the dentist. And obviously, because of having to do fillings and I had a couple of root canals with crowns that need to be done, I was quoted an absorbent amount of £6,600.
Good gracious. That is exactly. A lot of money.
Look, and I'll be honest with you, it's private dentistry. The NHS was not available. And when abscess is formed, it all of a sudden becomes a medical emergency that you have to take care of it.
Yep.
And obviously, as some of your other
So what did you do?
So what I actually did, I have a friend that lives in Portugal, and I actually flew to Porto.
Yep.
For £120 return.
Right.
And I got everything done for €960.
€960, did you say? The line clicked at just a crucial moment.
That's right, €960.
Wow. And it's worked, the teeth are in good shape, and no regrets whatsoever?
No, not at all.
And
all
how,
good.
Did you find, how did you find a dentist in Porto?
It was through a friend of mine that said, look, we know some dentists around, and I was able to get a few quotes, and I was able to go and have a nice bottle of wine during my trip as well. So
nice bottle of red to take away the pain. Andre, thank you. Thanks for your kind comments about the show and the good morning. Glad you picked up on that. Have a good day, Andre. I'm done. If you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Put the news categories in the order that you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and as I was strolling casually down the stairs towards the studio, I found myself wondering whether or not there are any precedents for what resident doctors warn us is happening to their profession. If serious change is not made, if pay increases are not delivered, and major changes to some of the training conditions and contracts, then the entire profession could be, if not sunk below the waterline, then certainly nobbled or hobbled. And I couldn't think of anything. And then as I came down this corridor towards the studio, and I heard Nick and his callers talking about dentistry. And I found myself thinking, well, when I was a kid, I'm pretty sure that dentistry was pretty efficient, pretty straightforward. Should we heed the resident doctor's warnings more?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, authorities in Australia are investigating a trip the Bondi Beach gunman made to the Philippines last month. 15 people were killed when father and son Sajid and Navid Akram targeted a Hanukkah event on Sunday. Searches have uncovered explosives and homemade IS flags. There are reports they travelled aboard for training. Australian students Wilson and Josh joined a vigil for the victims in Westminster last night.
It was just shocking to see some place that I'm so familiar with be desecrated in such a way. I'm quite shaken up.
You would never think something so crazy and such an act of violence
would happen in a place that I'm also so familiar with.
A government minister says the BBC should stand firm in the face of a lawsuit from Donald Trump. He is suing the broadcaster for $10 billion for selectively editing one of his speeches in an episode of Panorama. The BBC has previously apologised but said there is no basis for the claim. Official figures show another weakening in the jobs market, with unemployment at 5.1% in the 3 months to October. Wage growth also fell back to 4.6% but remains ahead of inflation. Analysts say that strengthens the case for an interest rate cut from the Bank of England later this week. The former Health Secretary, Alan Milburn, has warned there is a real risk of a lost generation in Britain. He is beginning an investigation into the causes of high levels of unemployment and inactivity in young people. It'll look at the causes of growing inactivity among 16 to 24-year-olds. Mr. Milburn's told LBC that radical and sometimes uncomfortable solutions are needed.
And we know that there's about 1 million young people. The numbers have been rising. Unemployment figures are out today. And unfortunately, we're in the middle of a perfect storm, as you know, with really since the pandemic, the rates of employment amongst young people have been falling. The rates of unemployment has been rising. So something is going on in the youth labour market.
Doctors' leaders have rejected claims that patients will lose their lives as a result of this week's strike in England. A BMA deputy chair told LBC that deaths could actually go down during the walkout because consultants will be providing cover. The five-day strike is due to begin early tomorrow morning. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 97.38. That's down 13. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 13. LBC weather still quite foggy, then a dry day with plenty of sunshine for many. Cloudier with some patchy rain in the south. Southeast, a high of 12 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a sharing bag of Doritos Chilli Heatwave for just £1.45, down from £2.50 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of large stores, Doritos 180 grams and 2nd of January. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. That might have been a little bit bonkers. I never know whether it's exciting or dangerous when a thought occurs to me as I come through the studio door and Nick Ferrari is still talking. And I think, oh, yes, that's a very insightful observation, James. That's, you must share that immediately. But I do think, and I've sort of checked my memory banks and with a couple of colleagues, that when I was younger, dentistry was fit for purpose. The idea of a radio phone-in or a news story detailing the difficulties, nigh on the impossibility of getting an NHS dentist, and the rarity of NHS dentists undertaking emergency surgery or emergency operations, which is in the news today as they plan changes to the system that would sort of make it more attractive for them to do so. I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. I know Americans like to laugh at us for having awful teeth, but I think, and we were definitely NHS when I was a kid. I definitely wasn't receiving private dental health. It was my friend's dad was our dentist, actually. And I'm pretty sure it was largely fit for purpose. I don't think I'm going bonkers. I can't imagine that Kidderminster was going through a golden age of dentistry while the rest of the country was suffering from untold cavities and tooth decay. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty good, right? And then you fast forward. I don't know who is responsible, whether it was the Labour government that was in power till 2010 or the government that came after that, or possibly even the government that came before that. But there were some fairly profound changes to dentistry, to how dentist surgeries are run, to how dentists do their thing. And from where I am sitting today, things have got much worse, not much better. That's not the phone-in, by the way. That's just a sort of observation. Because what I was trying to think of was an example of people in a profession, ideally a public sector profession, but not necessarily, people in a profession who warned us that they were circling the plug hole, or they were in danger of major systemic and even existential decline. So they come to you and they say, sorry, they come to us and they say, please support us as we resist this government, because if we do not get some of what we're asking for, then our entire profession will be compromised, will be diminished, will decline. And you absolutely should care about that, because, ideally, it is a public service and you are a member of the public. It's funny, isn't it? One thing we've all got in common, right, and I can say this with supreme confidence, we are all members of the public, every single one of us. And we are all humans. And yet the direction of political traffic in much of the Western world at the moment is attacking rights for humans, or human rights, as they're often called, and the public sector, or areas of our economy that are ring-fenced because of their intrinsic essentialness to the public good. But if you're a member of the public and or you're a human, that's spoiler alert, you are both, you're being softened up at the moment to resist legislation and movements that recognise and reward people for being human or for being members of the public. Anyway, I digress. Because the doctor's story is obviously where my brain is bouncing at the moment, and the confusion I have really over whether or not I support this. Yeah, probation officers, prison officers. I don't want to make any enemies, but minors, I think that's a slightly different suggestion, albeit that Margaret Thatcher was perfectly happy to contemplate the complete destruction of the mining industry. It was a political decision. So while the miners might have warned about it, it wasn't that we would all suffer as a consequence of the mining industry declining. I mean, it left parts of the country in a parlous state. But yeah, I guess in the sense of them saying, you don't understand, they want us to be destroyed, we should perhaps have paid a little bit more attention, because we didn't actually think, or a lot of people didn't actually think, Arthur Scargill certainly didn't actually think, that they would preside over the complete destruction of the coal mining industry. Prison officers and probation officers, they warned us in no uncertain terms when Chris Grayling was in charge of their profession that changes were being done to the profession that would render it much, much less fit for purpose. I don't know whether or not the increasing popularity of prisoners being released by accident is a consequence of changes that Chris Grayling brought in. I don't know whether, and this might just be my morning reading, there seems to be an awful lot of young ladies having sexual relationships with prisoners at the moment. There's another one in the newspaper today, posing provocatively. That's almost certainly not fair, because I imagine someone's just pulled a picture down from her Facebook page or her social media. But I don't remember that being quite a commonplace occurrence when I was young. But, you know, we were told repeatedly by prison officers, and particularly by probation officers, that changes being made to their profession would be to the public ill, to the public harm. Anyone want to argue with them now, retrospectively? Anyone want to tell prison officers and probation officers that they should give their heads a wobble and apologise for warning us about what might be on the horizon? Anything else?